Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, it's the 23rd day of August 2013, and we have made it all the way to Friday on the front porch, on the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home, the home of what we like to call conversation radio. Listener-influenced, listener-shaped, listener-driven, and listener-supported. The Listen Live button is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There are a number of other streaming options you can find at WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for this program. There, too, you will also find the podcast address, and you can sign up for the RSS feed and just get the podcast as it comes along, or you can also find it over at iTunes. If you like to listen via your tablet device or your smartphone, we suggest the apps from TuneIn Radio and perhaps even Stitcher Internet Radio. Good, good. This is, as noted, a listener-supported undertaking. Through your kindness, we managed to raise $100 last night, which leaves us, in order to stay, well, not stay out, but get out of the hole we're in this evening, we need to raise somewhere around, I think, $350. You know how it is with me and math. But, yeah, 35 folks at 10 bucks apiece, and any permutation thereof will be fine. The PayPal button is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. So, too, is the traditional mail address, which I will repeat at this time. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And a gentle reminder, checks, money orders, things like that should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should, in fact, be made payable to Head On Communications, The Horn, something like that, because that's what makes it ever so much simpler for Boss Man Wayne to deal with them when he goes and hopes to find something in the mailbox besides an echo. Okay? All right. So, yeah, it's Friday on the front porch, and as I announced last night, we're going to try two straight weeks of Friday on the front porch, real live, honest to goodness, neighborly conversation here at the end of the week. We will have, I hope, a happy, merry band of folks in the Skype chat group, which is, well, and has been moderated for years now by our good friend Duncan. You know him as Sparky in the chat room. And the chat room has a couple of folks in it yet, so goody-goody. If you've never been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, jump right in. And if you've never taken part in one of the Skype chat groups, jump right in there, too. Just send me your contact information at bobkincaid@gmail.com, and I will forward it on to Sparky, and you can be part of the whole overall shenanigans, if you will. Now, yeah, 23rd of August, 2013. I'm on the road tomorrow evening, or tomorrow, all day tomorrow. Ferg and I are heading up to Cumberland, Maryland, for a screening of The Last Mountain and a discussion about what follows after The Last Mountain ends, and hopefully a general understanding of what it is and why it is that we are working so diligently to try to eliminate the scourge that is mountaintop removal from central Appalachia. We'll be back on Sunday. We'll be passing through Morgantown, West Virginia, on our way to and on our way from And on our way back on Sunday, Ferg having college set in his sights somewhere down the road, hopefully, we'll probably drive around my old alma mater, and I can hopefully give him several good reasons for never wanting to attend. That sounds harsh, doesn't it? Probably. But the fact of the matter is, I would prefer that he not go to WVU. I would prefer that he have, if possible, a very good, small, liberal arts college experience. Because, honest to God, and I know a lot of you went through this sort of thing, I did too. I don't know how you learn much when you're sitting in a lecture hall with 450 people. And you're being taught by a grad assistant. I mean, grad assistants have to have work, I understand that. But, what a hell of a way to go through English 1. Oof. So, yeah. But we'll probably stop and look around Morgantown. And then almost all of next week is a normal broadcast week, with the exception of Thursday. There's going to be a town hall panel discussion in Charleston regarding West Virginia's energy future. And my dear colleague, good friend, and AIC campaign co-founder, Bo Webb, will be there on that panel, surrounded by coal and gas cheerleaders. So Bo will be in sole possession of facts and truth and actual concern for human rights. And I'm not sure, but I think it's going to stream live. I will try to get that. I'll try to get a link up at AIC.org to let you know all the particulars of what's going on. So you can check it out if you want to. I would the Horn would stream it, but since it's being hosted by a for-profit media company, I'm sure they don't have any interest in sharing. So there we go. Let's see. Stuff for this evening. Well, I was talking in the Skype group last night, and I said that I had a real humdinger of a clip for this evening. And I do. In the wake of the detention of Glenn Greenwald's lover, boyfriend, partner, significant other, whatever word is most appropriate, at Heathrow Airport, of course, there was a great conniption thrown all over Blogistan. Some justified, some less so. And it is, but lo and behold, the Chicken Noodle News managed to do something that's fairly difficult. You know, we've got a lot, over the years, we've done a lot of clips demonstrating for-profit media fails. I'm trying to think back, however, the last time that I witnessed one of these things that was a fail across the board. Usually it's one side screwing up and the other side going, "Hur." This is an unusual clip because both sides are painfully wrong about just about everything. I don't even know that they can necessarily agree that they're both occupying the same planet. And it involves Jeffrey Toobin, who is apparently a pompous ass. But not to worry, the other side of the discussion is little, if any, better. So that's in the hopper. We will go to the full Friday on the Front Porch panoply of conversation, preferably somewhere around 8 p.m. or 7 p.m. Eastern time. So I'm really looking forward to that. And, of course, that means we can also engage the phone lines, 304-658-3333, as an adjunct to all of that. So, yeah, we're going to go to the for-profit media fail in a minute, but before that, a story out of Washington, but also, in many ways, out of central Appalachia. For years now, people like Jeff Figgers and others among us have been trying to wake up or alert a generally disinterested nation to the fact that we're still about 1,000 coal workers die per year, either in retirement or in the midst of their active careers. About 1,000 coal miners die per year of black lung in the 21st century, 2013. It's about 3 a day. And people who know the coal industry have been rather shocked at the inaction. No one, zero people need die in 2013 in the 21st century of the common current era. No one need die of black lung. It is absolutely preventable, as are about 99% of mining injuries. The cause of most mining injuries being nothing more than simple, unmitigated, remorseless, guiltless, conscienceless avarice on the part of the mine owners, mine managers, and the banksters who bankroll them. The Lexington Herald Leader opined, black lung has been the underlying or contributing cause of death for more than 76,000 miners. You know, that's 76,000 working people. Not since 1908. Oh, hell no. Black lung has been the underlying or contributing cause of death for more than 76,000 working Americans since 1968. And that comes from NIOSH, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. The Lexington Herald Leader continuing, that total does not include deaths from silicosis, which is caused by breathing dust from rocks such as sandstone. Dust, or as we like to call it, ultra-fine particulate matter of less than 2.5 microns in size, less than 1/100 the size of a human hair, or less than the size of a virus. Black lung is not declining. It declined for a while, but lately, it's on the rise. Black lung rates have doubled in the United States since 1997. So, lo and behold, in the wake of things like this, the investigation done by the Center for Public Integrity and National Petroleum Radio, that investigation concluding the disease, black lung's resurgence represents a failure to deliver on a 40-year-old pledge to miners in which few are blameless. The system for monitoring dust levels is tailor-made for cheating, and mining companies haven't been shy about doing so. Meanwhile, regulations often have neglected to enforce even these porous rules. Again and again, attempts at reform have failed. So 3 years ago, the U.S. Mine Safety and Health Administration, we call them MSHA around here, proposed new rules to deal with dust and black lung. Down at the Charleston Gazette, reporter and host of the blog Coal Tattoo, Ken Ward Jr., says, it was held up in part, this rule that was stricter rule that was introduced 3 years ago, held up in part by Republicans in Congress who insisted on a U.S. Government Accountability Office audit, but also delayed repeatedly by MSHA and the Labor Department as well. So lo and behold, the Obama administration sent a notice or posted a notice on the Office of Management and Budget website yesterday saying that the final version of the new stricter rule regarding dust and black lung had been sent to the White House 2 days ago, namely Wednesday. So maybe there will be a little relief for miners. One of the interesting things that was discovered along the way is that people working on mountaintop removal sites have higher incidence of black lung than people who actually work in underground coal mines. In addition to things like silicosis. And while it may seem cold comfort, as noted, I referenced several government agencies, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, the National Institutes for Occupational Safety and Health. Miners, and sometimes even, although it is so weak as to almost be a walking futility, the United Mine Workers, they have people, they have organizations, they have governmental structures that at least can provide relief to them in the form, for instance, of this rule, which it is hoped will severely curtail, if not outright end, horror that is black lung. Because to see someone, and my grandfather died of black lung, to see someone die of black lung is horrible. The lungs are simply destroyed. Naturally, when black lung was first discovered, the coal industry said, "No, that's him, no good, no account, linger and lay about union workers. It's because they smokers. They smoke cigarettes. Hey, coal dust is good for ye." And they fought every step of the way, the coal companies did, against even the acknowledgement of black lung as an actual disease. But in the modern era, these miners have someone, some agencies, tasked with trying to see to their needs, occupational safety and health needs. This coal mining is dangerous business. Contrast then that with people whose families have been on tracts of land up hollers and on hillsides for sometimes 6, 7, 8, 9 generations, whose cemeteries are full of people who, if they were not killed in the mines, often lived into their late 80s and 90s, but where now fresh graves appear of people living in the very same place who die in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, their 50s. And of course, these places we're describing are nearby, in close proximity to mountaintop removal sites. Miners have institutions that are tasked with looking out after their health and safety needs. The people who simply live where the predators of the mountaintop removal industry operate have, and I'm not overstating this, not by a scintilla juris, no one and nothing. Imagine that for a moment. You live your life in the shadow of a mountaintop removal site, day in and day out, your house rattles and rocks and rolls from the blasting. Your foundation of your home is cracked. No matter how fastidious a housekeeper you are, at the end of every day, everything you own is covered in a grimy, gritty, filthy layer of toxic dust. And you have no one to whom you can complain. To complain to the governor of this state is to carry coals to Newcastle. No, it's not. That means that's an obvious thing. No. No, it is to be a lone voice crying in the wilderness. For Earl Ray Tomlin has no interest in the people who are being killed and poisoned, all the way down to babies in the womb on any given day in the blasting hell of the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. To complain to Junior Senator Joe Manchin, well, you'll get a response back saying, "I'm awfully glad you wrote to me. I'm a friend of coal." Are you a friend of coal? When in fact the entire Appalachian Sacrifice Zone has been rendered a friend of coal insofar as the entire Appalachian Sacrifice Zone's population sacrifices its very essence, its very living, its very being. You know, existential crisis-wise, so that the coal companies could go on profiting by people's sickness, illness, misery, agony, and yes, death. You might drop a line to Nick Joe Rahal, or you might just drop a line to a tree in the forest. The outcome will be the same. You might try dropping a line to Shelley Moore Capito, but, well, she's so far into the pockets of the coal industry that she couldn't find her way out with a shovel and a flashlight. Representative David McKinley is a teabagger and can't imagine anything better than watching his state be blown to smithereens. Senator John D. Rockefeller IV, J. Rockefeller, will send you a letter telling you how concerned he is about the health and well-being of West Virginians and won't do much of anything, even though he's on his way out of the Senate. He's quit and he's done. He's had enough. Don't even think about querying you're a member of the West Virginia House of Delegates or West Virginia Senate, because they sold out to the coal industry cheap, and being good little politicians, had the common decency to stay bought. So bravo to the Obama administration, who have heard the cries for justice from workers who are dropping dead at the rate of 1,000 a year to black lung disease. Bravo! Bravo, Obama administration! Bravo! Now, the question is, in the name of God, what do those innocent people, what do those defenseless people, what do those unrepresented people have to do to get the Obama administration to notice that we are in as grave shape as the coal miners are and are absolutely unprotected? Does everybody living at the foot of a mountaintop removal site have afforded a dust mask? Is that what it is? A respirator? Now, that would cost money now, wouldn't it? That'd be bad for the job creators. So even though there are 4,000 statistical excess deaths in West Virginia's mountaintop removal communities every year, so far, the Obama administration has merely looked the other way and said, good luck with all that. So this new rule will limit the levels of coal dust exposure and require miners to carry continuous personal dust monitors. But nothing, absolutely nothing, not a sausage for the men and women, for the children, for our elders. Nothing. Not even a bare acknowledgement of the science that points to the abject, unmitigated sorrow and horror that unfolds day after day after day in house after house after community after town after funeral parlor throughout southern West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, southwestern Virginia, and eastern Tennessee. Not a goddamned word. Not a word. Well, there is a word. The word is ache. A-C-H-E. Appalachian Community Health Emergency. And the bill is in Congress. You've heard me talk about it extensively. And the work, the tireless work of a small band of dedicated people who have been told by industry and by big greens alike that the effort is not to their liking, still struggle onward. The AIC Act represents the only piece of legislation in the Congress that would provide at least that would provide some semblance of relief to people who aren't getting paid to be exposed to the dust, but are just being exposed to the dust and poison because it happens where they live, because it came to them, it was permitted, it was invited, it was sought out, it was solicited to be brought and laid down on top of children splashing in creeks, to be blown across boys mowing yards, mama's hanging clothes on the line, daddy's bent over working on the car engine in the yard. Sure would be nice, and there's never enough time and never enough manpower. It sure would be nice. Person power. It sure would be nice to get the Obama administration to simply acknowledge these horrors that visit innocent families day in and day out until the days themselves are no more. So I thought it might be good just to mention that story. There will be some protection somewhere, perhaps, for coal miners. But absolutely and utterly nothing for the people who are asked to sacrifice their very lives, and for nothing at all. there is a spirit of resistance. You know, the effort to pass the AIC Act is resistance-based. But it also works within a systemic framework that acknowledges that if you want a law that will, if you want to stop this somewhere along the way, you're going to need a law that stops it. Unless, of course, we're willing to wait for the miraculous, invisible hand of the free market to stop it for us. But the only way that ever happens is if all the coal is finally taken, all the hills are blasted, all the water poisoned, and all the air toxified, and then there's nothing left to get. And then the invisible hand of the free market will stick itself up in the air and wave, bye-bye, y'all! Good luck with the cancer now! Invisible hand of the free market, moving on! Thus, I take a certain amount of inspiration from Jonathan Moylan, who is an Australian. He's a native of Newcastle in New South Wales. And lo and behold, Jonathan Moylan has dedicated himself to a principle. See, you don't hear a whole lot about it, but there are parts of New South Wales that are absolutely toxified by strip mining. Coal exports from New South Wales in 2012 came in somewhere around $13.9 billion. The Hunter Valley region, or the Gunnedah Basin, was whence came the majority of that $13.9 billion. And they're expanding because China wants more coal. Understand, Australia doesn't needs scarcely a lump of this filth. This is done simply to provide profit for the coal companies who put this filth on boats and send the filth to China, where the filth is burned and the Chinese people are poisoned. That's what we call value-added poisoning. Jonathan Moylan has been busy making the coal industry in Australia quite miserable. Back in January, he issued a bogus press release in which ANZ Bank allegedly announced it was withdrawing a loan from Whitehaven Coal. The value of Whitehaven Coal Company was reduced by $314 million almost instantaneously. This is a hero. Thugs came and seized Jonathan Moylan's laptop and his phone. He was brought into Sydney for compulsory questioning. And then they charged him under Section 1041E of the Corporations Act of Australia with making a false and misleading statement. On September the 3rd, he returns to court. The maximum penalty attending making a false and misleading statement under Section 1041E of the Corporations Act of Australia is 10 years imprisonment or a fine of up to $765,000 or both. Incidentally, Whitehaven Coal is also being investigated for false statements in their effort to get a permit for their ongoing operations. Want to guess who's in deeper trouble? You already know. it's quite interesting that Clive Hamilton, who is an Australian public intellectual, wrote in a column last January something that we have been saying here as well. To environment groups, it's been apparent for some years that the traditional methods of campaigning have been woefully inadequate in securing a political response anywhere nearly proportionate to the threat posed by global warming. For those open to the implications of the scientific warnings, a sense of despair can take over when they see once again the failure of governments to protect the future well-being of their citizens and the extraordinary power fossil fuel corporations exercise over government decisions. The language I find most interesting out of that statement: it's been apparent for some years that the traditional methods of campaigning have been woefully inadequate in securing a political response. Yeah, really. It's been more than a generation here in Appalachia that people have been marching, demonstrating, protesting, over the last decade, going so far as to risk arrest, chaining themselves to things. Just this week, some young people rode out onto a toxic waste sea, the Shoemate impoundment, the Shoemate Dam, in western Raleigh County, eastern Boone County, and unfurled a banner. A lot of that been going on. Nothing has changed. And some of us, and if you consider yourself an environmentalist, I would like you to take just a few minutes to consider this possibility. And I welcome your input and your thoughts on this. People who have allowed themselves to be called environmentalists, we've come to realize, have self-marginalized. Because for the most part, the majority of this country is not going to get upset about birds, bugs, beetles, and butterflies, or fish, or dolphins. That is not to say that they are not worth getting upset about. I get upset about these things. You get upset about these things. But if we're ever to change the away from the bad wrong road we are on in this country, we've kind of gotta find a new way of trying to touch people's minds and hearts. And that's why the AIC Act and the AIC campaign are distinctly not environmental campaigns. Because they cannot be. It is a human rights effort and a human rights bill. Because with people dying and becoming sick and birth defects on the rise in a region like this, we cannot afford the privileged luxury of being perceived as moaning and groaning about esoterics. I like to hope that maybe there's enough goodwill in Australia that Jonathan Moylan's situation will generate outrage. Consider what he's charged with. He's charged with making a practical joke that didn't cost anybody anything. The share value of that pissant coal company did drop $314 million, but once it was announced that it was a hoax, it gained it all back. Nothing was lost. And yet he may spend 10 years in a prison in Australia and or be fined up to $765,000 for doing nothing more than acting upon the dictates of his conscience. let's try to remember and keep an eye on this story. September 3rd, he heads back to court in Australia. It'll be worth the effort. So that's an idea of where we begin. I mentioned, however, that epic media fail. This is it. The setup behind it being that over on Chicken Noodle News, Jeffrey Toobin, who is their legal analyst and expert, showed up to talk about the detention of David Miranda as he went from Berlin carrying stolen property via Heathrow on his way back to Brazil, and his partner, spouse, I guess they're not married, Glenn Greenwald. It's been a long time since I've seen such a massive for-profit media fail. Even longer still since I've seen one in which neither side even begins to comprehend the issue at hand, and which shows once again that this is nothing but this so-called news is nothing more than a vehicle for delivering viewers to people who need to be told which soap to buy, or who need to view an ad about the Burlington Northern Railroad, or might go to see it again on the website and get an ad for clean coal. This just sucks. And that's why I'm going to run it. After the ad is over, I forgot that I had refreshed the page. This is just privileged snottiness at either its best or worst, depending on how you care to characterize it.
Do you believe the British government was justified in detaining David Miranda for some 9 hours?
I sure do. Let's be clear about what Mr. Miranda's role was here. I don't want to be unkind, but he was a mule. He was given something, he didn't know what it was, from one person to pass to another at the other end of an airport. Our prisons are full of drug mules. Glenn's view is, as long as one of the two people on either end of that transaction was a journalist, he can take anything he wants. He could take the nuclear launch codes. He could take the names of our undercover agents.
His play was paid for by The Guardian, though, so wasn't in effect he acting in a journalistic capacity?
No, I don't think that matters a bit, who pays for your ticket. I mean, he's on a plane with stuff that is highly classified. You know, anything he wants. It turns out it wasn't the names of our undercover agents. It was the extremely classified, presumably, NSA material. That is not the law.
But does it? I mean, he's being detained under a British UK a terrorism act, which is only supposed to be used to detect and find people who are connected to terrorists. There's no indication that David Miranda, they knew who he was. They knew he's not connected to some terrorist group.
Great Britain has its own laws that are similar to ours, but that are somewhat different. Their terrorism law takes it one step farther. They say, it's not just the material this person is a terrorist, but can be used by terrorists. And frankly, if terrorists know how we surveil their cell phone calls, how we surveil their texts, that could be useful.
Well, couldn't any information published by a journalist be used by terrorists in some way? And,
no.
and can't that excuse be used to then detain journalists?
Not at all. Not classified information of this. I mean, it would have to be classified information of this kind.
Jesselyn, what do you think?
You know, I think that argument is completely vacuous. First of all, as Mr. Toobin says, he is presuming. He, in fact, has no idea what was on those thumb drives and other documents and electronics that were seized. Nobody does. But no matter what was on there, it obviously had to do with journalism. Laura Portras is a journalist and a documentarian. Glenn Greenwald is a journalist. And David was serving as an in-between, not as a drug mule. I have to wonder why the U.S. government and our allies are so desperate to keep our illegality secret and our law-breaking secret that they're willing to use a terrorism law to try to stop a journalist.
But Jocelyn, just to you know, be devil's advocate here, I mean, if the British government thought there were stolen documents that were being transported, why don't they have the right to stop this person and check?
The British government, if it thought they had stolen documents, could go through the criminal process rather than using an anti-terrorism law, which has nothing to do with stolen documents. And there's been no evidence of that whatsoever put forth even by the British government itself that they thought these were stolen documents.
Mr. Miranda was lucky that they used the terrorism law because he wasn't even delayed. He wasn't even stopped overnight. I mean, you know, I'm sure it was inconvenient to be stopped for 9 hours at the airport. But, you know, when it happens to you on JetBlue, they don't even offer you a lawyer. So, I mean, I just don't think he was sent to the gulag. He was delayed for a while, and they took what appears to be stolen classified information. I think Mr. Miranda actually did pretty well, considering what he was carrying.
I have to interject. I hope the next time that Mr. Steuben is stopped for 9 hours and detained with no due process on an anti-terrorism law, that he is equally as generous with his assessment. But clearly, being detained on a terrorist law, an anti-terrorism law, having spent time on the no-fly list myself, is pure government retaliation against a whistleblower, and it's a criminalization of journalism and whistleblowing that have been going on. And frankly, the United States has been behaving in a completely unhinged, desperate, and rather foolish way dealing with it.
Justin, you talked about due process. Under British law, though, there is no right to stay silent in this case. There is no, under this UK law, there is no right to have an attorney present. They actually offered him one of their attorneys. He declined. But under this law, the person being questioned has no right to have counsel there.
I'm not arguing that. I'm arguing that under this law, to be held under Schedule 7 of this particular law, you have to have a reasonable nexus to terrorism. And here, there has been absolutely none asserted, unless someone is trying to make the government the argument that journalism is the new terrorism.
Well, what about that, Jeff? I mean, that is Glenn Greenwald's argument that basically it's linking journalism, conducting journalism to acts of terror.
The word journalism is not magical immunity sauce that you can put on anything. You can put on anything and make eliminate any sort of liability. You know what? If he had the nuclear launch codes in there, he could, you know, that they can take that. If he had the names of undercover operatives, they can take that. Our government and the British government regards the method of surveillance as just as serious a security breach.
A pox on both your houses. Jennifer Raddick, who uses one of the sleaziest tactics of argumentation with which I'm familiar. Well, I hope when they do it to you, Jeffrey Toobin, please. You know, when you make that argument, you're admitting, oh, look, I've lost. And then Jeffrey Toobin, of course, is a sanctimonious asshat in his own right. I've got an idea. And I know this will be really, really foreign to the folks at Chicken Noodle News. Why don't you bring on someone to talk to the incredibly well-coiffed Anderson Cooper, who actually knows what they're talking about? You know, like somebody with a law degree, with a law license, maybe a barrister or even a solicitor, you know, from the UK. Instead, you've got a pair of axe grinders here, taking a story that is very, very serious and reducing it, I don't know, call it the crossfire syndrome. It's a miracle one or the other of them didn't say, Jane, you ignorant slut. somewhere in the process. What stolen property, Isaac? All the property that Edward Snowden stole. That stolen property. Because it is. Remember, Snowden, whatever good he has done, admitted that he took the job solely for purposes of stealing the information. That changes the situation significantly. But regardless, like I said, it's been a long time since I've heard anything this is worthy of Fox. Bring on two people whose only goal in life is to snark at one another. Journalism is not some sort of secret, magical immunity sauce? Check your privilege, Jeff. Check your privilege. And you too, Jessica. I mean, let's stop talking about secrets for a minute. Let's talk about a flat-screen TV. You leave Berlin with a flat-screen TV. You're passing through Heathrow on the way to Brazil with a flat-screen TV. There's a report that the flat-screen TV that you're carrying has been stolen. Is the UK under an obligation to look the other way while you, with the flat-screen TV in your arms, go sashaying and swanning through Heathrow Airport on the way to Brazil? No. I'm about the most anti-authoritarian individual anybody is likely to run across. But I do at least acknowledge reality. And one of the things that drives me craziest is these people who are running around saying, oh, this program's unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional, 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 this, fascism, democracy is... Please. Can we at least take a moment to acknowledge reality? Acts of Congress. Acts, and this is American jurisprudence. I won't speak for the UK because I know little or nothing about their law. But I know that in the United States, acts of Congress are presumed to be constitutional until proven otherwise before a court of competent jurisdiction. That has not happened. So just be on the lookout. Anybody who says that something is unconstitutional in this light or many others lately is talking out their ass. Because it is constitutional. Until it goes through the judicial proceedings necessary to prove it is not. To the Skype line, Sandra's with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob. I don't know. I'm not really feeling that excised about anybody bucking the state like this. I mean, the British state is horrific for utilizing terrorism laws to apply to anything now.
Right, and it goes all the way back to the.
It's a bit scary that those laws were meant for suspected terrorism, and now it's just being applied to any perceived, quote, threat to the state. And, you know, to me, that's kind of problematic, personalities notwithstanding.
Well, it's creepy, and it is, but Sandra, it's also to be expected. And all I'm arguing here for is a sort of reality world approach. This law primarily was brought, if my research is correct, was brought into being over the IRA. Or the origins of this sort of paranoia in the UK had to do with the Troubles.
Yeah, well, yeah, but they've only apparently used it for three individuals. So, to that length of time, to the whole 8 hours and 59 minutes. I mean, I just think that obviously this whole NSA stuff is, you know, it's a big problem for the elites, no matter what personalities are involved. To me, I just think that these sort of actions smack of, I don't want to say desperation, but, you know, it's pretty heavy-handed and a bit over the top.
And I would argue also, Sandra, inept.
Well, it's inept, but it's kind of, I don't know. I just find it, I didn't really call for that. I called about the idea that we're now preparing to do cruise missile strikes against Syria.
Oh, I know.
This shit right here is unbelievably disturbing. It's like, I don't know what the proof is. Ever since the Bush administration, these anonymous government sources telling me that some despot has used chemical weapons they probably bought from us against their own people is justification for us to allow the executive branch, war powers now. Okay, so now Obama is about to bomb Syria? Are you fucking kidding me?
They are.
This is out of control. It's a big problem. This is not something. Syria is not Libya, and the pretense smells real bad.
Well, absolutely it does. And
the NSA is overshadowing this big time because the exposure of that bullshit is starting to, cause problems for the administration.
Well, see, Sandra, the NSA thing, if I can just break in for a second, the NSA thing, it kind of plays into this. If the NSA is out there in conjunction with the CIA, the FBI, the yada, 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 if they're out there monitoring all this traffic and they're keeping us safe, I should probably have turned the reverb up on keeping us safe, then how did they miss the fact that there were going to be chemical weapons strikes in Syria?
Well, no, that's the thing. And how do they miss the bank shenanigans? But obviously, it's a system that's in the hands of whatever, because they're using it to put innocent Americans away, from what I can tell, with the DEA, and God knows what else they're doing with this information. So, I have problems with a sort of Stasi type of setup on steroids, because I don't, the idea that they turned the internet into just a big spy mechanism, I guess it was kind of predictable, but it still doesn't make it palatable, and it turns our country into something other than whatever we thought it was.
Yeah. No,
I think that Snowden, Greenwald, whoever the fuck is bringing out this information, more power to them, because, my mother didn't know about this shit before Snowden. Now she does. So,
there is that truth. I mean, there are those who, I just happen to remember being extremely pissed off when it turned out that the New York Times had sat on Bush's domestic spying program for a year so as to protect his reelection.
Oh yeah, no. I know. I see that. I mean, I remember reading about this stuff when I was undergraduate, about the different types of intelligent gathering that's been going on, since whenever. So it's not, surprising in that way. But the use of this technology is frightening in what it can really do quite quickly. I mean, I just think that, maybe I'm sounding paranoid, but there's no reason to think that any nascent uprising or any sort of whatever that might be bubbling up in this country can be completely annihilated with this sort of all-encompassing global surveillance that's going on. And I think that it can be utilized for that purpose and that purpose alone. I'm not giving a fuck about Al-Qaeda number 2, 3, and 4. That's bullshit. I'm sorry. But some motherfuckers getting together to protest and try to stop the massive foreclosure or GMOs or whatever else might be going on here, that is what will be shut down with the quickness with this kind of spying that's available to them.
And you know what? I think, Sandra, that is an exercise in lowest hanging fruit or lowest common denominator sort of behavior, because I can't get over the fact that this has in my estimation, next to nothing to do with so-called national security, because if it did, the brothers Tsarnaev would have been stopped.
Right.
Maybe a gas attack in Syria, or some slaughters in Egypt. But the fact of the matter is, this thing is being run not for national security, but for corporate profits. And once again, not to sound piss-anty or anything, but can somebody please stop talking about the government and start talking about the influence of Booz Hamilton or Booz Allen?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I would like just to hear one person tie in the Carlyle Group, and we know the Carlyle Group has investors from Saudi Arabia. So you're telling me that Saudi Arabia is investing in spying against? The dots are sort of endless when you start talking about the sort of private capital, Obama's favorite term these days, is involved. So anyway, I don't really have anything else to say.
No, but bless his heart, poor Obama's out there, and we get the tenor of it when I say bless his heart, right? We've got to build trust in the NSA for the American people and it sure sounds scary, but it isn't really.
Well.
Like you said, the UK, and, we're moving toward the UK's security state paranoia. Remember that, you've seen that iconic photograph, right, of the security camera hanging right next to the plaque that says George Orwell lived here?
Yeah.
I mean, please.
The UK is so far down the rabbit hole in that regard. It's pretty frightening. But, I just think that, planning on, sending cruise, I don't know. It just seems bonkers.
But he's being, the sad thing, though, is that he's being triangulated toward it. Because, look at all the weirdos hollering for it. McCain, Huckleberry Closet Case Graham. Sitting there screaming for brown people to be obliterated.
Right, but why is it happening on Friday? Because, most Americans aren't interested in these wars anymore. That's all. I just think,
But think about this politically, Sandra. What a coup it would be for the Republican Party, to make that one start a war.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he doesn't have to. He's the one that's in the executive branch at the moment. And, I don't know. Are you saying there's a gun to his head in some way?
Well, I think they're just, I think the White House isn't sharp enough in that regard. Why do they keep getting their asses whipped by Lindsey Graham and John McCain?
Well, yeah, but there's also, he could just be a warmonger. There is that.
Yeah, that's a possibility. And God knows he's got some genuine, honest to God, straight up creepy bastards around him.
Well,
the one in particular, Sandra, and you and I have talked about him in the past, is Cass Sunstein.
Oh God, no! That he's like a horror show. I mean, that has to be one of the more creepier sort of people around. I agree with you on that. I mean, no. He ain't right. Something not right right there.
because Charlie Pierce referred to it, and then I read the entire post of Marcy Wheeler over at Empty Wheel about Sunstein's Harvard. This crap that people write at Harvard is beginning to come back and bite them in the ass.
Well, you got I know.
I mean,
remember bell curve people. Yeah,
the bell curve people, that freak at the Heritage Foundation.
Right. I classify all those sort of race people under the bell curve.
Yeah, that's the bell curve creeps.
Yeah.
The bell curve people all. Who should be kept in a bell jar. How's that?
Oh my God.
But this report that he authored in 2008, and Glenn Greenwald broke this. Okay, as Marcy Wheeler notes. Where Cass Sunstein is arguing while he's at Harvard Law School, which I've come to believe is probably a real net negative for the United States anymore, Harvard Law School, he writes this paper suggesting that the U.S. government should create teams of covert agents and pseudo-independent advocates to cognitively infiltrate, I mean, how much gobbledygook Harvard language is that, online groups and websites and other activist groups in order to help foster false conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I mean, he just strikes me as just I don't use it that much. Maybe I should use it more. He just strikes me as just a totalitarian, you know? I mean, I just don't know.
Yeah, he's already...
He's not a fascist. He's a, you know, he's more a statist. I don't know what to call him, but he is creepy as F, man.
I mean, this paper, there's a quote from this paper where he says, government stealth infiltration should send covert agents into, quote, chat rooms, online social networks, or even real space groups. And sort of marginalize anybody protesting against some aspect of government or governance, you know, the 9/11 folks come to mind, the so-called truthers, whatever. You're right, totalitarian. He's already gone. Cruise Missile Liberal has left the station.
No. We're way past that now because we're entering this sort of Cruise Missile Liberal combo what do they call them once in the Bush era? I've like lost my train of thought.
Neocons?
Neocons. It's like, you know, it's all sort of in just one big sort of ball of hell with these people. And they all end up with the same goal, is to use the U.S. military in some capacity.
Right. Well, but to drill it one level down, Sandra, to use the U.S. military to aggrandize the corporate power structure in this country. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm sure you can get far more granular than that, but I'm just concerned because Lebanon, you know, they all of a sudden, you know, rockets are falling from the sky into northern Israel. You know, that happened the other day.
Right, and that does not play well in Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, or, you know, out on the kibbutz.
And we got a sort of, I don't care what they want to say, it seems to be, you know, the makings of a civil war in, you know, one of the most populous countries in the Middle East is Egypt. That ain't no joke right there. I'm like, how you gonna feed all them people if you got a low-grade war going? It's all just so horrible.
And, right, and what country around Egypt is prepared to accept a massive influx of refugees?
Well, they just, you know, but the refugee movement is crazy too. I just read the other day that 30,000 just poof appeared at the Iraqi border, you know, from Syria. Literally, they just showed up, and it's just kind of like, you know, you start getting these massive migrations of people, which I think is coming anyway with the coming climate catastrophe. I mean, seriously, the idea that they're thinking about bombing that country is just really sounds like the worst, absolute worst possible thing that can go on right now. I'm just sort of dumbfounded by it.
No, you're waiting for you're waiting in dread for the other shoe to drop. See, it was... I've said the other day, you know, Ferg's had gone back to public school, and so I'm getting up really creepy, bad for me early in the morning these days. And yesterday morning just happened to, because I can't stand CNN or anything, and at least there's the sort of train wreck, clown car at the circus value of Morning Joe. And I tuned it in, and that bunch were doing everything short of calling Barack Obama a sissy because he hadn't already started slaughtering Syrians.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know, I understand what you're saying, but the thing is, you know, I don't have any illusions that he wouldn't have done just what he's about to do, because there has been no restraint on his part. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, when it's all sort of like, oh no. I mean, oh no what? He bombed the shit out of Libya and turned that into a sort of Somalian wonderland, and there's nothing being said about it. It's just, you know, meandering on. So, but this Syria stuff is a bit special. I know he's mad at Putin, but he might not want to be mad at Putin because, see, China, Russia, you know, this all is sounding sort of 1985-ish right about now. And that's kind of scaring the shit out of me, man.
And the ironies are not lost on me. You mentioned China. You mentioned Russia. I happen to live in a place where that is being treated as a colonial resource colony for both nations. Mm. I mean, we've got communities being poisoned and people being killed, you know, slowly, awfully, horribly, agonizingly, so that Russian concerns can ship mountaintop removal coal out of West Virginia and send it to the Russian steel mills. The same thing for China. We got coal getting on boats and going around the world to China. And, you know, resource curse much, right? And so, yeah, it's got a sort of a nasty retro flavor to it. I agree with you wholeheartedly, especially when you take into account, I mean, look, the Syria thing, I thought with the fall of the Soviet Union, we were done with these stupid little proxy wars.
Well, it's a straight up proxy war. And I mean, you know, we're talking tens of thousands of people have been sort of slaughtered in Syria. And, oh, we're just going to send some cruise missiles. That won't raise the count at all. I mean, the idea is just, it just makes me physically ill that I am a party to this madness, because the other madness that's going on, as I'm a Californian, in this motherfucking shit in Japan. That place is contaminated. That nuclear plant is out of control, and some bad shit is coming.
Didn't the IAEA the other day say we doubt the ability of TEPCO to even deal with this problem?
They said it's a horror show. That's the words that an agency used. They're not prone to hyperbolics like, you know, maybe I am. They said it's a horror show. Their words. Now, I live on the West Coast. Shouldn't be eating fish anymore. You know, like never again.
I'd be thinking twice about the milk, too.
And all that shit. And not only, but it's just, TEPCO is actually forming the words in their corporate mouths of attempting to move those, one of those things called, they're above the building that's about to crash.
The
rods?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and this has never been attempted in the history of ever, and they're talking about they need to move these tons of fuel rods, oh, by the way, because the building's going to collapse soon. But if we move them, we may release enough radiation to destroy the northern hemisphere.
And we live again where? Yeah.
You know, so I'm just kind of like, la-di-da-di-da, la-di-da. You know, thinking, oh, well.
Well, you said 1985 a few minutes ago. This is 1955, black and white, the recent entry into the atomic age horror movies.
Well, no, but it's just hideous. I mean, anyway, I just, you know, because, you know, it's bad if these, you know, corporate news outlets are sort of reporting on it now. You know, it's just kind of, the government is trying to say what? They don't know what the hell they're doing. They're concerned that, oh, shit, it might contaminate the water for 40 million people. What do we do now? Tokyo.
Right, and that goes back. I think the reason for the corporate news blackout is probably has something to do with you've got an island nation, jam-packed, wildly overpopulated, and I say this with a great deal of fondness and reflection and affection for the Japanese people, and if you tell them the truth, what happens?
Well, yeah.
I don't say that as a way of excusing what's gone on. But you mentioned the trials and tribulations that come with mass migrations of humanity. Let's try that one on for size.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I just think that situation seems to be out of control, and it's very disturbing that Obama is concerned with sending cruise missiles to Syria instead of organizing an international response to that madness, because that's what it needs. The Japanese aren't able to deal with it. Okay, TEPCO can't. The Japanese government can't. It is an international situation.
Did you catch the quote? Did you catch the quote from China?
Yeah, what did they say?
The Chinese said, we are deeply disturbed with the lack of transparency from the Japanese government and would hope that they would give us better information in the future. That's a little freighted, isn't it?
Wow. Well, no, all those countries around there are freaking the hell out. They're just, you know, they're tripping. You know, I've been looking at news from the, you know, Asian, you know, sort of English Asian media, and it's just like, oh, shit. You know, it's really fraught right now. I mean, but, you know, China's dealing with their own sort of, what's it called? The wet bulb sort of temperature that keeps getting near 35? You know what that means. That means you start dying, you know, en masse. They said they've never had weather like that where it's so humid that it drives that particular temperature up. And it just all sounds just like it's really out of control.
Well, if we were little fundies, Sandra, we'd be on our knees with our hands clasped in front of our face hollering, "Come, Lord Jesus." Because it's feeling a little apocalyptic.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know what to make of it, but the Fukushima stuff is a worry because it's just kind of this silent, odorless type of hell that is going to manifest itself, you know, over the next few years, unless they decide they really need to move those rods. I think that sounds like, you know.
Well, can I ask a really stupid question, Sandra?
Hmm.
Move those rods to where?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and then my favorite about that is they've been building these tanks willy-nilly. Did you know the tanks that hold the contaminated water? They didn't weld them. They use rubber. And, the rubber's leaking. That's where all the leaks are coming from. They don't
even know.
I'm telling you, I was like, oh, my God. So they estimate, they're now admitting that, well, you know, this contaminated water has been leaking into the Pacific Ocean via the groundwater for the last 2 years.
By the how many hundreds of thousands of gallons per day?
I have no, you know, just so much. It's just kind of crazy, but I don't know. I don't.
Well, the water, you know, the water thing, good God, that story from, what, last week that noted that it's not just tritium anymore? That now it's strontium 90 with a half-life of 26 years?
Well, the strontium 90 is really horrible because it's, you know, that's like a ticket to just bone cancer. That's it. You're done, man. It's a horrible one. The tritium? Yeah, there's some real nasty ones.
Yeah, that's your rotten thyroid radiation.
Yeah, the strontium, though, is just terrible, and that's what they're freaking out about because it seems to be just a huge amount of that.
And
type
what
of
and what happened? What happened with the radiation monitor? The West Coast radiation monitors? Didn't they get pulled or something?
Well,
or?
Yeah, you know, all of a sudden, no, we can't do that. And the worst
they got sequestered.
Well, no, there's no data now because they stopped. We should have a wealth of data on this radiation. But the EPA was, you know, I guess we're told not to. And so now we're all sort of in the dark about the type of radiation, how much, how long, on and on and on. It's incredible that, yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. So they have a few monitors in Berkeley, you know, but it's a conscious effort to sort of, I don't know what they expect. I mean, when they get, like, sort of some huge mass of people with horrific cancers, it's going to be what? What's going to be reason? Just one of those things, I guess.
And just the process, and I even hate to talk like this, Sandra, just the process of however many of those people are who start coming down sick and dying? No, you're talking about the potential for numbers of people that approach the inability of Black Death Europe to its dead.
I just some of the articles that are being sort of written are just terrifying. The sort of numbers they're talking about if different scenarios would play out at Fukushima. That's the thing, you know. So,
I mean, what are the real world numbers out of Chernobyl? Now, granted, they play fast and loose with them.
I thought it was 1 million.
Yeah, right.
From the Russian researchers, they came. That was the number that I remember reading. Maybe it was 600,000 to 1 million, something like that.
And do we even have they made an attempt to separate out the deaths from the earthquake versus the deaths from the tsunami versus the deaths from the radiation? Have you read any of those numbers?
No, but they already have, you know, the sort of really weird thyroid activity of children that the likes they've never seen before. So, I mean, that's already going on in Japan. So, you know, it's already happening.
And the current structure coming off of Japan, the water goes where? I mean, long term into the Pacific. How long to Hawaii? How long?
And the Japanese groundwater, you know, like that's the thing that's really, the water that they drink. So, and the government, all they tend to do is they keep raising up acceptable limits. I don't mean to laugh, but I mean that's.
No, we've experienced that here, so.
That's what goes on. So,
you know, we really need to hear from Robert and Kita Kyushu at some point, just to sort of give us an on-the-ground perspective from over there, or anybody else in Japan.
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't understand why I'm not hearing from people here. All I'm hearing is that Governor Moonbeam wants to force-feed motherfuckers. That's what I'm hearing here. I don't hear nothing else.
Well, and create chaos in the K-12 bathrooms of California. Don't forget that.
Well, you know, but I mean, the fact that they're, you know, they got approval from, you know, ex-judge to go ahead and force-feed these prisoners, it's just like, oh, wow. I don't know. That kind of blew me away, too.
Well, it's all stunning. Like the story coming out of Guantanamo in the last couple of days, that we are censoring the books that the people in our concentration camps can read. And, you know, the goddess of irony just threw it into overdrive. Apparently, a copy of Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago was seized.
Oh, shit. So I guess no George Jackson's going to be down there either, huh?
Jesus.
Damn.
I wonder if they'd let him have T.E. Lawrence.
Well, you know what? Shit, Animal Farm might be a problem at this point.
The funny thing was, the guy who reported having his copy of the Gulag Archipelago confiscated, the article noted that he is a lifelong fan of he's read it dozens of times, I guess in Arabic or whatever, of 1984.
I mean, no Kafka, I guess, either, I bet, huh?
No, and I'd bet Camus out.
Camus, wow. I mean, the idea of depriving people from that is fucked up, man.
It's ugly. And, by the way, in terms of California issues, Marty just wrote in and said, Sandra left out the fracking in the Sequoia National Forest.
Oh, how about the Yosemite burning up? I hear that's burning right down. It's expanded to a thousand. You know, listen. I mean, that's why I haven't even been calling, Bob, because it really is just a sort of litany of horrors, you know. I don't have nothing to talk about. I can't even shift to Geno Smith because it don't even sound right for you to talk about that fool.
Yeah, but we all know you had a crush on Mark Sanchez, so just knock it off, okay?
Ah, he got a beard, though, and I'm not feeling that.
No.
That
yeah, he's looking a little creepy, isn't he?
I don't.
But Geno's going to start tomorrow night, right?
Apparently, I mean, I don't know. I guess he's gonna try to take it. Good for him, I guess.
Well,
good
but
luck.
Yeah, I know. Well, he twisted his ankle trying to make a turn on the turf. You know, there, what, 2 games ago or whatever. It'll be. I mean, I got a soft spot for him. You know, because he's a He's a West Virginia. He's a West Virginia alum.
Well, too bad he didn't go. You know, I mean, I think anybody with any sense, if they want to play that brutal game, they need to go play for Pete Carroll with all his mental health and all the shit he does over in Seattle. Shit, people living good. No, you
well, I just I feel sorry for any quarterback fresh out of college who gets stuck under center. You know, brand new, wet behind the ears, newbie rookie. You know, that's a great way to become an ex quarterback. And well, any organization that would pay big money for a kid to come play quarterback, and then just put him because you know he is not going to be safe behind that offensive line of the Jets, Sandra. He ain't.
Oh God, it just sounds sounds like it's you know, I don't want to say funeral because that's a bit dramatic, but it sounds like it's going to be a problem. But I mean, you know, can we agree? This is a different team now, but can we agree that quarterback for Washington is a bit of a dick?
Who, RG3?
Yes.
I confess to sort of, you know, what is, huh?
Yeah, I'm not. He just seems like he's a bit of a, you know.
Yeah, a wrinkle.
Yeah. Him and who's my other favorite one that just sounds like a complete wanker is that Johnny Football.
Does he just no, did you I mean did were you listening the night I talked about the story from the sports writer who compared him to Rosa Parks?
Oh, that David Zirin just went to town on that bullshit. I was rolling. Yeah, he said Rosa Parks is Rosa Parks. I don't know. I just thought that was really funny. It's like, yeah, shit.
I mean, what's next? Comparing him to John Carlos at Mexico City?
Yeah, it's too much. I mean, you know, the thing about that whole Johnny Football is that, you know, his dad rolling out to him. Well, we don't got Garth Brooks money, but, you know, we all right. And I'm like, oh, my God, these people just sound like, I don't know.
Don't live on the same planet as us.
Oh, wow. But at any rate, you know, he just sounds like a wanker. And that whole story with him, some teacher that he had taught his ass wanted him to sign something. And he said, oh, no, I can't do that. I mean, he just sounds hideous. And I'm really looking forward to when they play Alabama or some team like that, so he can get spanked. And
well, he didn't even make first team All SEC quarterback.
Oh, please! It just sounds he just sounds hideous, and I just want them to get sort of beat regularly, so I don't have to hear about no fucking Johnny Football.
You know who I've taken to thinking of whenever I read Johnny Football's name, Sandra.
Ugh. Who?
A little voice in the back of my head says, Ryan Leaf. Remember Ryan Leaf?
No. Was that the one who had the sort of meltdown?
Washington State, big draft,
right.
You know, wet gunpowder.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, usually these little discussions about the sports is kind of, you know, amusing, but it's really not even doing that much for me, Bob. It's hideous. What can I say?
Well, it's a point, Sandra, where, excuse me, you find yourself kind of deliberately trying to divert yourself, and you're going, I need to be interested in this for a little bit. Please, I need some diversion. and you're sitting there wondering, you know, I wonder how many millirems I'm breathing right now.
Well, it's also making me just really sort of dark too, because I'm sitting there saying, oh shit, when is Denver playing so I can watch for the, you know, my quadriplegic watch. Now that's not very nice, but that's where I'm at. I'm looking at Peyton, I'm thinking, okay.
Yeah, because see, they don't pull their punches in real time. Like, because I watched, what was it, last night, I saw Flacco get sacked. I guess it was like the third quarter of the game with Carolina.
Didn't they get beat? Or who got beat badly? Oh, the Patriots, which was a beautiful thing by Detroit. Please, that was great.
Yeah, and the thing is, I watched somebody sack Flacco, and it was like he wrapped him up and just sort of gently set him on the ground.
Oh.
And I thought, you know, that doesn't happen in the real season. And no, so.
I, well, I heard that the NFL are freaking out because is it a Frontline that's going to run some concussion documentary? And they're trying to shut it down.
Well, ESPN backed out of it.
Okay, well, somebody is going to run it, though, because they were all, you know, it was all this sort of, I guess it's pretty damning.
And in a way, that's had a profound impact. I used to, you know, this time of year, I start beginning to quiver because, you know, it's Mountaineer season and football season's coming, and I'm sort of girding my loins for the eventual heartbreak that's bound to come. You know, the Mountaineers are the most successful Division I so-called college football team in history that has never won a national championship. So, I mean, it's not like we're the Cubs. But you get but I can't anymore because I'm aware of this head injury stuff, and it's hateful business.
Well, I mean, to me, I wish I could find it, but, you know, this calls for Seneca wrote this sort of amazing piece about the spectacle. I'll have to send it to you.
Oh, please.
Because it's very appropriate for this madness.
Oh, by the way, we have a new analogy coming in from Fritz in Arkansas, and I think this will have some resonance for you, Sandra.
What's that?
Johnny Football equals Tebow with a beer.
Oh, God. Yes, that sounds about right.
And is little Timmy Jebo, is he gonna make the cut in New England?
Oh, who knows what they're gonna do with him, but you know, they're gonna do something with him because they have to sort of rent, you know, cleanse their palate of that fucking serial killer they had on their team.
Well, and that'll be the big excuse if they happen to flop this year. Well, we're having a bad season because our attention was diverted by virtue of the fact that we had a serial killer on our team.
Right. Well, once again, back to Seneca the Stoic. Yeah. So he was talking about, you know, what the spectacle does to him and the people around him. And it's such a really good piece. So I don't know. I'll just send that to you because you might enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Marty just shot a note along. He said, better than the Patriots getting beat are the reviews of Jesus H.P. Tebow. You're going to love this. Heaven's Gate got better reviews.
Oh, that was a hideous movie. Stop. Who sent that in?
That was Marty.
That's a good one. If you're going to mix in a Heaven Gate blast, man. Good one.
Yeah, yeah. Rich.
So the performance is kind of bad, is it?
Still haven't learned to actually throw a football.
Oh, shoot. But they'll hang on to him just for PR, I think.
Well, they'll hang on him. I don't know how many... Lottie in the chat room perhaps could be instructive on this. I don't know how many fundies there are in the greater New England sports market, but if they can, you know, if they can get a few fundies into the stadium screaming Tebow, 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 you know, it's good for business. I mean, the hot dogs are probably $15 in that stadium.
Let me ask something right quick, since it popped in my mind. Has President Not Sure come out and said anything about that woman, that black woman?
Yes.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he talked about her today.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want any talking. I want Presidential Medal of Freedom.
No, I'm like, you know, pony up, Negro. I was wondering if he was going to come out and say something because that story is just begging to be, you know, bandwagoned. So I was waiting.
And, you know, I thought the smartest comment last night came from Waggy when he said, I want to see a resolution for the Congressional Gold Medal to be struck in her honor, introduced in the House, so that the teabaggers can say, oh, hell no, and then, you know, sort of live with it.
Yeah, well, at any rate, I just wonder. I mean, I hadn't been paying attention to, you know, what's coming out of the Oval Office, but I just wonder if he had commented on that, because that's such an extraordinary story. And, you know, Home Chick was so matter-of-fact, I'm like, damn, thinking about myself, eyes darting to the nearest exit.
Yeah, exit stage now.
Right. So I'm impressed, but you know, whatever. God damn, I'm glad that everybody survived.
Let's see. From Politico, which is not exactly something that I don't treat that as a real source, but just on a quick search, Politico reporting, Sandra, that President Barack Obama said he might be inviting her to the White House. He called her courageous and said she probably saved a lot of lives in an interview filmed Thursday and aired Friday morning on CNN's New Day. Let's see. Here is somebody who is not just courage, not just cool under pressure, but also had enough heart that somehow she could convince somebody that was really troubled that she cared about him. I think we might have to have her maybe make a visit to the White House.
Well, you know, and
he called, and so he picked up the phone and called her.
Oh, well. I mean, you know, but the Republicans are so stupid because, you know, they could have tried to got something out of this, too. You know, it made some inroads with some darkies, but no. Well, they would never know what to do with any kind of opportunity like that because they're racist crackers.
Oh,
and that is just, I promised myself that I wouldn't say that on your show because I know it's some issues, but I can't help it with those people.
No, I understand.
Okay.
I really,
want to clarify it because I don't want the Caucasian community to freak out about it.
Well, this part of the Caucasian community doesn't, so, you know.
Well, whatever.
Hey, speaking of presidential invitations and stuff, I got to take you backwards a minute. There's this article that's appearing in this month's GQ on the Alabama head coach, who I know is on your short list of noble human beings. And I love it. The title is "Sympathy for the Devil," and he is referred to as Nick Satan. Which, you know, I've been calling him that for years. So, you know, shout out to the guy down there writing the article. But the best part, the most stirring, I mean, you want to talk about a type A personality, you know, probably comes near killing himself just farting. It is recounted in this story about Nick Saban that that after Alabama repeated its national championship, he turned down a personal invitation to the White House. And I know that there's a sort of an immediate response in most of us when something like that happens, and it's the head coach of Alabama. But the article goes on to say it had nothing to do with politics. It's just that it cut into Nick Saban's recruiting time. I mean, this guy's a machine.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, it talks about the fact that he eats the same thing for breakfast and lunch every day of his life because he doesn't want to waste time making decisions about what to eat. Wow.
Well, I mean,
that's either really zen or really in desperate need of a Thorazine dart in the neck.
Yeah, no, I mean, that sounds,
He has two Little Debbie snack cakes for breakfast every morning. And they're always the same Little Debbie snack cakes. And
what
he
are
had,
those?
Kind of like Twinkies or something, you know, Hostess cakes, you know.
That's what he eats?
Yeah, that's breakfast. Two Little Debbie snack cakes every morning. And he has a salad with cheese and turkey for lunch every day because it drives him crazy to have to waste time that he could be recruiting or strategizing or, I don't know, ignoring people in the hallways to make a decision about lunch. And that kind of thing just, you know, I read that excerpt and went, what the kind of pathology is that?
Yeah, no. Pathology is a good word across the board, sounds like, for this guy. Doesn't sound like the kind of stuff you want to be on your deathbed thinking about, though. Oh. You know, I mean, that's what I don't know. That sounds
right.
Kind of weird.
And Jug of Punch just noted in the chat room, Little Debbie is cracker food.
Oh, I didn't say it. That wasn't me. Not I.
Credit this to Maka. He says, Bob, we both know Johnny Football only got the Heisman because the year before Texas A&M moved to the shit Eastern Conference SEC. I mean, come on. What are the odds of an A&M from the Big 12 getting a Heisman as a rookie, please?
Right. Oh, no. Well, anyway, so the regular season start, is it in 2 weeks or what?
After Labor Day weekend, there's one more round of preseason games, and those are the most meaningless of because no starter plays at all. And then the following week, the regular season starts, NFL-wise. Of course, college football starts, I think, either next Wednesday, and then on Thursday, there's this huge-ass slate of games. And then it's on come Saturday.
Wow, okay.
And I think it's Saturday that Alabama plays Virginia Tech. And based on it, that should be a beatdown of monumental proportions.
I don't know, but that'd be something to...
Yeah, Virginia Tech was picked to finish dead last in its half of the ACC.
So Ohio State is eligible this year or not?
Oh, yeah, and in the hunt, they're like number two behind Alabama.
Well, didn't they run the table last year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but if that dude don't keel over... That's
right, I was going to say, you got to remember, Ohio State is being coached by a genuine straight-up head case.
That's what I'm saying. So that would be another one to look. There's Peyton Manning, fused neck. Then there's that fool who may keel over. So, yeah, there's a number of sort of gruesome, ghoulish type of things.
Well, and with Johnny Football, how long before he's caught in a point-shaving scandal or, a shoe contract gig or...
Yeah. It's shady with that one. So that's true.
And nobody is expecting anything whatsoever out of my Mountaineers. So watch this space, you know.
Oh, okay.
By the way, you got fan mail in from Michael. You know, he says, "Oh my God, it's so good to get the inside of Sandra on a Friday."
Oh no! Oh well, that's a. I guess. Thanks.
But it is awful good to hear from you, know. I think about you out there, and I know after these long years of our conversations, I know that you're sitting out there kind of drumming your fingers, going, because this is a crazy world.
Well, yeah, it's just really. I mean, I'm sure we went back to some of the earlier chats. There might have been a little bit more hope in the old voices, but I'm telling you, it's pretty fucking dire, man. It's dire. But anyway, listen, Bob, I'm going to have to let you go, so you have a nice weekend.
Hey, you too. You too. Talk to you soon, Sandra.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Been a long time since we've had a conversation with Sandra. Those are always epic. And, yeah, Sandra gets her own fan mail. It is Friday on the front porch, and anybody wanting to jump in, let me see how I'm supposed to do this. Go ahead and add me in, Duncan, and we'll start this Friday on the front porch, process. Okay. Now we're into some serious stuff. We're talking football now. I just got a little pushback from Fritz in Arkansas. WVU football, least successful? I make the case that the University of Arkansas is the biggest flop. The only national championship that Arkansas claims to have in college football is the Grantland Rice Trophy, because in 1964 the AP and UPI had final polls at the end of the regular season. Texas upset number one Alabama in the Orange Bowl on New Year's Day 1965. They're still steaming about that down in T-Town. Plus, Arkansas's win in the Cotton Bowl earlier that day set up the Razorbacks' only undefeated season. P.S. Yes, I've seen the video of the 1969 big shootout game, Texas at Arkansas, which would have led to a possible AP-UPI national championship for Arkansas if they'd won the thing. It's considered nearly Greek tragedy among hardcore fans of that school in northwest Arkansas. But see, we don't even have one of those, Fritz. We've got a long and storied... history here at Harvard on the Mon, and no national championships, but more than a century of heartache. I mean, we were playing Pitt when the two teams, University of Pittsburgh, we were playing Pitt when the two teams traveled back and forth on riverboats on the Mon, on the Monongahela River. And in fact, some of the earliest instances of goalpost tearing down were when the West Virginia fans would tear down the Pitt goalposts if they won there. And the Pitt fans would tear down the West Virginia goalposts if Pitt won at WVU. Because the boat would just stop and just straight up the hill to where the stadium was. Yeah, it goes back to when, the original name of WVU was not the Mountaineers. The first name of the WVU football club was the Snakes. I kind of like the Snakes. About a quarter to eight, a little over... Halfway done with this Friday's edition, Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. And I just got to say this. not setting the world on fire with fundraising. Not a guilt trip, just a reflection of reality. Not a penny. So that means, you know, we're headed into the weekend in potentially tough shape, especially with the kind of September coming that is coming. But, hey, Skype group.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Duncan,
hey,
what's happening?
Bob.
All right, Mouseketeer roll call. Who we got?
Sergey's in the house.
And Larry's here, but I think he's muted. And Betsy is having problems. She can't hear us.
Oh, dear.
So she dropped off the call, and I guess she's going to use the laptop next time. I'm not sure whether she can come back or not.
Okay, so we got Duncan and Sergey and Larry and...
Senior Bean.
Oh, Senior Bean. Okay, awesome.
He's kind of shy.
Don't be shy. We're all friends around here.
I was thinking when Sandra was talking, I'm only 138 miles north of her. So we feed a lot of birds around here, and I got the cattle ranch behind me. So if the cattle start dropping dead and the birds start falling from the sky, I'll know the radiation from Fukushima is here.
Yeah, time to get moving. But the thing is, you know, Duncan, it's incremental stuff. And I think that's what the powers that be are counting on, is that it happens just a little bit at a time. It's not all the birds die. It's just, you know, 5% of the birds die. And then the other 95% starts laying eggs that have paper thin shells. And by the time you go, oh, wait, there's a problem, well, it's too late. It's kind of like what happens here. If you get to the point where you're opening your faucet on your to get your water out of your well, and it comes out looking like tomato soup and smelling like grim death, well, that means you've been ingesting the poison for a hell of a long time before it even got that bad.
With the farm animals in West Virginia, any noticing any?
Well, I mean, down
you're
there
talking about chickens and stuff, yeah. Eggshells.
There's not that much of that culture left down there. Because, like, when you blow up a mountain, well, you just push it all over and fill up a valley, what happens to the things that live there? They just die. And they're already buried, so you can't really count them.
Well, I'm saying that people must raise chickens. My neighbor raises chickens.
Yeah.
And so people must raise chickens there, too, or have...
You know, sure, goats, sure, but the nature of chicken husbandry is such that, you know, they lay, and then eventually you eat them, so you don't. Nobody's running toxicology on them.
Oh, okay.
One of the things that happens with the Ake Act is that a full, it requires a fully funded federal study. That would include both in vitro, hopefully both in vitro and in vivo testing, where you send people into the communities and get blood samples and hair samples and stuff like that. Because that's never been done, because God knows the coal industry doesn't want it to be done.
What about people's dogs and cats?
Again, no toxicology, but lo and behold, I mean, I know just Bo's existence, you know... Dogs just drop dead that ought not necessarily be dropping dead. And, you know, there are fish kills in stream where in the streams where all the fish suddenly start swimming on their sides at the top of the water out, you know, dead.
Yeah, well, I think we've talked about the fish before, three-eyed fish.
Oh, yeah, crooked spines, that kind of, you know, I always call them Simpsons fish.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's tough. And it's hard to get a handle on, because as long as there are no bright lines, the coal industry can continue to say things here like, well, it's because they eat all that gravy.
Did you know there was a coal mine in Alaska?
Oh, yes.
I didn't know till last this week when my sister came back from Alaska. She had a picture of the crane and loading chute apparatus on the coast where they fill the ships that go to North Korea.
There are more coal reserves in Alaska than there are in the entire continental 48 states combined. The problem is that it is ungodly hard to get to them because, for instance, the name of the company is Pac Rim Coal. They want to mine out and somebody can correct me because I will have the Chuitna River, Chuitna River. They want to mine it. Huh?
Chitawit or something like that. Yeah. I've heard about it. Pebble. It's called the Pebble Project.
The Pebble Mine. I think that's another part of it. But yeah, it's 17 miles of reproducing salmon stream, and they want to. And by the time you get down to the coal, the problem is you're below sea level. But of course, we know there are repiglicans out there who say things like, "Oh, what is sea level anyway?" Mm-hmm. But it's below sea level. So they have, and so you've got toxic water, and that's got to go somewhere. But they promise that when they're done, they'll dig a 17-mile concrete ditch that will be better than the original Chuitna River. Beautiful, huh?
Yeah.
Or as I like to say, lying bastards.
I'm putting the link to this Alaska coal mine into the Horn chat room.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever looked at it before.
I've seen some pictures, but let me. Okay, there it is now.
They seem to do a lot better job at reclamation work.
It's easier to do it on flat ground. You know, you just cover the hole back up and hope for the best.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing
is, flat.
Well, parts of it are. If you're not having to blow a mountain up. I guess what I'm saying is if you're not having to blow a mountain up, it's a little bit simpler process.
Well, that's true. You're starting on flat ground and going down.
Yeah. The same thing that they deal with out in, say, the Powder River Basin of Wyoming. But the problem is that even with that, the farmers who are downstream, yeah, their cattle die. And then when they complain about it, they get asked, why do you hate America? Okay, 115 miles south of Fairbanks, 250 miles north of Anchorage. Yeah. I love that banner. Cleaner energy, brighter future. How? You know, by the miracle of Orwellianism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know why my sister took a picture of that when she was up there. I have my oldest sister has a lives up there during the summer because their daughter lives in Alaska. And then my sister from Tennessee came out for the summer to see my dad, and she flew up there with all my cousins to go on an Alaska adventure. And then they were going all over the coastline and shooting pictures of everything. And it just surprised me she took a picture of that.
Well, it's a big, it's a big ass crane, so it would kind of grab your attention, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking at a couple other news stories that are out there. Going back to what Sandra was talking about, this latest story via Agence France-Presse: nuclear regulators declare Fukushima leak a level 3 serious incident. That's a little horrifying. That's a lot horrifying.
Does anyone know how concerned I should be with, like, a bioaccumulation of strontium or whatever in the West Coast agricultural products, dairy and so forth?
Well, that's the problem, Senior Bean.
Bean is fine.
Yeah, Bean. That's the problem. The monitoring isn't necessarily taking place, and as Sandra noted, every time somebody raises an issue, the response is to simply raise the acceptable levels of ingestion. But yeah, it bioaccumulates, sure. At least within, unless my science is completely wrong, at least within the parameters of a 26-year half-life. that's a little frightening. That's a lot frightening. And like Sandra said, you know, that's not thyroid problems. Strontium is bone cancer.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sergey's the weather expert guy. I mean, the water comes up out of the ocean and make the clouds and all that, is it going to get into the clouds from the water in the ocean?
I don't know much about how radiation is what the issue is. It's I know about how weather works, but I don't know. I honestly wouldn't know if radiation, the water, stays in the water. But just going off of how other pollutants work, because, you know, acid rain happens when you've got water that picks up air pollution as it condenses into clouds, it condenses into thunderstorms, it condenses into whatever falls, you know, the water's still polluted for the rest of its, you know, cycle. And so I would figure that the it's no different from radiation. I would figure it's no different. My educated guess is that, you know, contaminated water, groundwater, and surface water that evaporates, condenses, and falls is still radioactive when it falls. And in fact, you know, come to think of it, that is the case, because after the Chernobyl incident,
It spread all over Europe.
Yes, after the Chernobyl incident, you know, it contaminated so much water around that area. And I believe it was the Olympics, or some kind of big event was happening in Moscow that would be drawing all sorts of worldwide traffic. And the Soviet meteorologists noticed something. There was a storm system moving in to Moscow, forecast to move in right the day before all the big events happened. And this was in a book years ago, so I'm struggling to remember what it said exactly, but there were polluted waterways and water sources that the storm was going to move directly over and draw large amounts of water from through evaporation. And they said, this is going to be, these clouds are going to be radioactive. And so what they did is they seeded the clouds to make the rain fall before it got to the city of Moscow, basically to dry the storm out before it got to Moscow. They succeeded in not poisoning Moscow, but they poisoned many, many miles of countryside in the process.
Yeah, and see, so, you mentioned rainfall. Just got a note in from Jan and Jerry out in Nevada. Jan writing, Jerry says tritium can rain out from the clouds. So that's kind of the very same thing that you're talking about there, getting the stuff to fall before it, you know, before it gets to a major population center. But the story from Agence France-Presse notes that Nuclear Regulation Authority Committee member Toyoshi Fukuda said, I can't help but say that it was sloppy talking about how TEPCO had mismanaged the whole disaster. And the water is, you know, not just getting into the groundwater. They put together a working group to figure out how much is going into the ocean and then where it's going, because it's not like Corexit where it's just going to fall to the bottom of the ocean, which is bad enough, of course. This is, you know, this latest leak is a level 3 serious incident, and that's a raise of 2 points on the scale up from what is merely designated an anomaly. The Agence France-Presse story noting, the company said the leak may have carried radioactive materials out to sea. Groundwater that has mixed with polluted water has already seeped into the ocean, with TEPCO launching an operation to pump it out of 28 wells. Jesus! And the article then notes the fact that they've been anything if not absolutely what's the opposite of transparent? Opaque about it all. And I guess they're trying to quell the idea of a total freakout among the Japanese people, because I won't speak for anybody. I would be freaked out. I really would.
Hopefully, in the weeks to come, Tim will join us.
Oh yeah, we haven't heard from Tim.
Tim's still doing his master's thing, so he's really stressed out. Plus, he's doing the Fukushima thing on Facebook most days.
Yeah, and that's got major freak out potential in its own right. Jim asking, has everyone seen the film Chernobyl Diary? He says it's a keeper, I assure you. So that's one to look at. And at Randy in PA noting, almond milk doesn't graze like cow milk does. Grazing bioaccumulates and bioconcentrates.
Almond milk.
Yeah, so he's saying that it might be a good time to think about finding alternative nutritional sources.
Well, do you know where almonds come from?
California.
Right here where I live.
Yeah, you are in almond country, aren't you?
I'm in the nut land. Walnuts and almonds, pistachios, olives.
Yeah, and doesn't that, so if you've got radiation falling onto the soil, doesn't that get taken up into the plants?
I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
I'll be looking at the newspapers and checking around. I think they got an air monitoring station up here in the North State. One of the airports, either here or in Reading.
And do you ever see any news out of it?
Well, I haven't been looking. I mean, since you freaked me out today, or Sandra freaked us out.
Now you will be?
Now I'll be looking.
And
I know the only thing air quality around here we worry about is forest fires. Usually this time of year.
Anything burning around you these days?
There was a fire like 16 miles south and 15 miles to the east, but I don't see any smoke. But that Yosemite fire is huge.
Yeah.
I understand Reno and Lake Tahoe are just inundated with smoke.
Yeah, brother. Everybody will be... If there's any truth to that business about how the casinos always pump oxygen into the casinos, in the gambling pits, that might come in handy at some point.
Yeah, if they've got the smoke as bad as I remember from our fires in 2008, you bet. Because it was horrible in 2008, those fires we had.
Yeah, and what Sandra said is apparently true, because this fire is just going by leaps and bounds. But then again, remember, looking back to the Arizona fire, what do we expect? I mean, who's going to march in and fight something like that, knowing that the municipality or whatever government agency is will turn around and, if you happen to get killed fighting it, will turn around and screw your family?
What I was reading today, there's over 8,000 firefighters on the fire lines and all the fires that are all over California.
Jesus. Well, the Yosemite fire, as of this afternoon, is only 2% contained, and about 4,500 residences are threatened. And the fire is pushing it to the east, right into Yosemite. An emergency has been declared. But, maybe we can get Tom Coburn to come out and explain to us again that there's no such thing as global climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks for nothing.
Yeah. If you go to, I'll post a link in the chat room. You can see all the where all the fires have been in California.
I'm looking at a photograph right now, this huge cloud of billowing smoke just getting ready to overtake the Groveland Ranger Station in Groveland, California.
Mm-hmm.
And the frightening thing is that which teabagger, Duncan, anybody, will be the first one out of the gate to say, well, we can't really afford to do nothing about this, you know, because we got the deficit that one done give us.
Mm-hmm.
But then Rick Perry turns around and goes asking for buku dollars from FEMA after having, threatened to secede 2 years ago? It doesn't bode well.
Yeah.
Hey, a couple of pieces of good news coming in. Thanks going out both to Diane and Mark, who together have gotten us $100 down the road toward tonight's goal. Kind of answering the challenge laid down by Robert in Australia, who wrote to say that as a result of a whole bunch of crap coming due this month in one fell swoop, he was unable to do the Robert's monthly 20th of the month down under challenge and calling for people to step up. Five folks at $50 to get his back for a month or so. And lo and behold, Mark and Diane have, so thank you very much to both of them. That's what makes all of this possible. And it really is. It really is. Any thoughts, all y'all, not to get all social, cultural issue or anything, but after last night's discussion of Bradley Manning and her announcement of wanting to be known as Chelsea, which we will honor here. Anybody, I mean, any insights from y'all?
No, not really. I don't know enough about the whole situation to really have a view on it.
Well, first of all, hi, it's Larry coming on. First of all, I'm very unhappy about the fact that he's serving prison time in the first place, or she is. And secondly, I thought that it was really out of place for that, Laura Ingraham, to make that comment and to have that blasted all over the news. Does the government have to pay for it? You know, I thought that was completely tasteless. I thought that was really cruel, and I think that should never have been broadcast. And in a healthier media environment, it wouldn't have been broadcast.
Larry, you got to remember, it's Laura Ingraham, okay? Justin Bieber has more class than Laura Ingraham does.
Whoa, that's low, Sergi.
I think in that sense, it'll just get worse as far as right-wing commentary goes.
Well, I ask you this because I have sort of a rhetorical question. And of course, this involves Radio Rwanda. The host of American Newsroom on Radio Rwanda is a creep by the name of Greg Jarrett. Okay, and he went out of his way today to refer to Bradley Manning as Bradley Manning, not Chelsea, and to refer. To use the masculine pronoun he and not she. And my thinking is I'm gonna honor that wish. You know, maybe when the rest of your life has fallen apart, something like dealing with a closeted gender issue, maybe that's what empowered Chelsea Manning to just finally get done with it and decide, okay, I'm going to prison for God knows how long. I'm at least gonna acknowledge who I am.
Bob, I wanted to ask a question about Greg Jarrett. Is this the Greg Jarrett that used to do news for ABC out here at KGO Radio, or is it Greg Jarrett?
No, it's J-A-R-R-E-T-T.
Well, there was a Greg Jarrett that used to do radio. He used to wear a lot of combat fatigues. I think he was working with the troops while he was working with KGO and reporting from the troop line, and he's originally from Texas, I think, but I'm not sure. So don't, you know.
I wouldn't be in the least surprised, Larry. But the fact of the matter is, let's see. I think I've got the see if I can run the audio here, if the machine will let me. Or maybe it's not even, I don't know. But, you know, we don't even need the audio. The fact of the matter is, though, Greg Jarrett said, people out there, don't send me angry well, here he is. Here he is now, hateful bastard.
He plans to live his life behind bars as a woman. The news coming one day after Manning was sentenced to 35 years in prison for one of the worst intelligence leaks in U.S. history. The Army says it does not provide hormones or sex reassignment surgery, which can cost tens of thousands of dollars, raising questions over how this would really work. Are taxpayers going to get stuck with this? Let's bring in former prosecutor Anne Marie McEvoy. As you know, Supreme Court has said you have to provide health care to inmates. And Manning and his lawyer are saying, look, this is medically necessary, so will taxpayers and the government foot the bill?
At this point, not, but it may turn around in a very relatively short time, and he may actually get this sort of treatment. The military has a policy at this point that says that they will not give this type of treatment. They'll give him mental health services, they'll give him counseling, but they will not give him this treatment.
But wait a minute. Manning has allegedly been diagnosed by a doctor as suffering from gender identity disorder. I looked it up. It is in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Put it up on the screen. Here's it. It's identified in these two ways. Desire to be or insistence that one is of the other sex, persistent discomfort about one's assigned sex. We'll get it up there. But look, if a doctor has recognized it and a lawsuit is filed, won't a judge say, I got to recognize it?
Right. And there's a very good chance that'll happen. So far, though, in the country, we have one court that has...
But you know what? It'll probably cripple the entire government to do that, right? Because that's the implication they're making. Oh, we can't afford to be paying for sex reassignment for everybody who's gender dysphoric out there. Goodness gracious, you know, deficit, right? But I've got a larger philosophical question here. You heard the repeated usage of the male pronoun in there, right? Here's my question. If Greg Jarrett can insist on calling someone who identifies as female he, and continuing to use Bradley instead of Chelsea, are the rest of us free then to refer to Greg Jarrett as the non-human thing that it is?
Well, I have to say that, first of all, you have lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered, and also people that identify themselves as, you know, being... you know, cisgender and all of that. And these topics are currently being studied in gender studies departments all over the country. So for this person, whoever this commentator was, doesn't sound like the great Jarrett that I remember from the past. But for these people to be talking about this situation in this manner is completely unenlightened and completely unfair. I don't think that there is such as there might be somebody who's confused about, you know, what their gender is, but if somebody really feels in their heart that they feel more comfortable as a gender different from the gender that they were biologically born with, I don't think that's a disorder at all.
I think we have to be really careful when we're walking around in this territory, Larry, because it can get if we start talking about choices or feelings. Apparently, according to the DSM-4, it is, you know, it's a diagnosable condition, and as such, I think we have to respect diagnoses. Or else everybody else is liable to having. What if the doc says, well, you know, you got appendicitis, and somebody says he only feels he has appendicitis? Then we're in terrible trouble. So, you know, I'm you know, this guy at Fox. No, I just want, if he's enough of a god of all creation to determine what pronoun, because this is what he said. People out there, don't send me angry emails that I referred to him as Bradley and not Chelsea and him as, instead of her. I don't do what Bradley Manning wants me to do, so thanks very much. My, isn't that butch. I just think that, you know, why would anybody email one of these clowns on Fox in the first place? I think we merely go about the business of being humans, and henceforward, if Greg Jarrett comes up in a discussion, then the pronoun we use for Greg Jarrett is it. Not he, not she, not him, not her, it. Because he has clearly, it has shown itself as being not suitable for being mentioned as a member of common, decent humanity.
What time does it come on Radio Rwanda?
I think it's on in the afternoon.
Your time.
Yeah, my time.
Oh.
So.
I will never see it then, because.
Right,
it's. My dad never turns the TV on that time, your time, afternoon. It's usually after 4 o'clock. He usually goes to Bill O the Clown first.
I was going to say, he's right there for Bill O.
Yeah, just before dinner.
Well, that would certainly put you off your kibble.
Well, me, I mean, we've gotten to arguments several times, and I walk into the room and I hear something, and I go, I have a what the WTF moment. I go, yeah. What the hell did he say?
No, I know. I have people actually ask me if I saw O'Reilly. And I'm going, no, I don't think I've ever watched O'Reilly all the way through, ever. I just see the occasional clip and know that, no, that's Crazy Town, and I try to stay the hell out of Crazy Town.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine what Limbaugh will have to say about Manning if he hasn't already?
You know, he's such a pathetic closet case. I wonder if he will.
The thing about Bill O'Reilly, I don't know how anyone can, even the right, I don't understand how even they can take him seriously anymore. Do y'all remember? It was a good while ago, several years, when that clip from him losing it when he was hosting Inside Edition.
Oh yeah.
Popped up on YouTube.
Effort, we'll do it live.
I don't understand how even the right can take him seriously now with the kind of childish, angry attitude.
Well, you know what the Savage Wiener calls him, right? And I mean, there's nobody loopier than Michael the Savage Wiener. The Savage Wiener calls him the Leprechaun.
I'm guessing that they aren't exactly buddies.
No.
Hey, Bob, did you ever watch that debate they did for charity with him and Jon Stewart?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, that was priceless.
Oh, it was. And yet, at the same time, even though it was for charity, there was, you know, you dignify O'Reilly by showing up on the stage, because you don't get any dignity from him. He just sucks it off of you. Mm-hmm. And you know, consequently, I don't know, I just... didn't speak to me. I mean, it's funny. It was priceless. I mean, it's nice to watch him get peeled like a grape, but he is so unself-aware, he doesn't even know when he's getting peeled like a grape.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, you know, that's the way it looks to me. Hey, a couple of notes coming in. Robert in Australia. Yay, thanks, Mark and Diane. Many thanks, says Robert, from the real top of the world. And this in from Kate. Hey, Bob, I'm late logging on. What'd I miss? Grin. Tonight, so far, on the horn. No. Wondering about how close to paying off last month. It's going to be a long stretch to make sure we're still hot when you get back from your educational tour. We're beginning to get smoke here in the Helena Valley. It's blowing in from Idaho and western Montana fires. Boy, oh boy, it's going to be a long summer. It's a safe trip to you and Ferg this weekend. Thank you. Thank you, Kate. And yeah, it's going to be a long summer, even though summer is You know, summer officially ends when kids go back to school, right? Although I guess it actually ends, what, September 21st, something like that? And that's the beginning of
September
autumn.
September 21st.
Yeah, the official date.
But it's been a weird summer here. It's monsoon season. It's done nothing but rain, it seems like. And in answer to Tate's question, basically, if we can get out of the hole, you know, we're even. And then we got a week to finish off August, and then hope to God we can keep things rolling in September. It's just scary. So, you know, there's that. Hey, let's bring on a telephone line too.
Okay.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Although I heard you say what people don't like Louisiana, Stan.
Oh no! I didn't say people don't like Louisiana, Stan.
No, maybe people referring to it as Louisiana, Stan.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I live here. I wish Louisiana was a little bit more advanced, you know. But
well, the sad thing is that once upon a time Louisiana was trying to, and you know that's part of the reason that Huey Long gets blown away. Is, you know, he was trying to drag Louisiana kicking and screaming into the modern world and actually pretend that it cared about, that the state cared about all of its residents and, you know, not just the wealthy ones. Jim, I saw, and maybe the Skype group saw it too, I saw this amazing footage of that horrifying sinkhole in Louisiana just a day or so ago.
Yeah. I didn't see that. I tell you the truth, I listen to you and Malloy. It takes up 6 hours and is only 24 hours in a day, 168 hours in a week, and I can't be concerned about trying to keep up with the other stuff sometimes, you know.
I seem to remember hearing something the sinkholes over some old abandoned salt mine or something.
Yeah, well, there's this one massive sinkhole in this one parish that's not too far from some sort of god awful dynamite factory. I forget what exactly it is, but I saw this video the other day of just an entire hunk of forest just being sucked into the hole and the water rushing in over it. I mean, it was weird.
I saw that video, too.
Yeah, that doesn't sound that surprising. I mean, I don't know, Louisiana, I don't know what the people think's going to happen. I mean, this is very fundamentalist religion once you go a little bit further north. And I guess they have a busload of faith to get by, and they're just putting in the hands of the Lord the several eight different versions of Jesus, as you and I talked about, Bob.
Right.
I guess they know that their Jesus is good. It's the right one, of course, and he's going to take care of them.
Well, you know what they say, the right one is the white one.
Of course. Well, that's the other funny thing about that, Clay, because I love it when you talk about Jesus as the brown-skinned Palestinian.
Day laborer.
Day laborer, yeah, exactly. I mean, and, you know, you pointed out, because I learned a thing if you listen to your show, you're very educational, that he probably was illiterate, which definitely makes sense back then, because literacy, I mean, and it's weird because it seems like we're almost going back to those times where, you know, as long as you can just do fundamental things and they can pay you, you know, a couple of dollars a day and enough to survive, because you riot like they do in Egypt, the people who run the society seem to be happy with that.
Sorry, I just had to check in with Fergie. Came rather breathlessly through the door of the studio to show me the baby water moccasin that he had just stomped. So now we're back to talking about snakes again. Well, that's okay. We're talking about Christianity, so you know it all fits.
Sorry, folks. My bad.
Wait, there's a difference between snakes and Christianity. Well, snakes at least kill vermin.
yeah, that, you know, I'm just got the creeping horrors now, and Ferg is not a well young man at all. But to go back to what you were talking about, Jim, you remember the story about the people who sailed off into the middle of the Pacific because God told them to?
Oh, yeah.
Because they just wanted to see what God wanted for them in their lives, you know, how he wanted to have a personal relationship with them, so he just sent them on a boat into the middle of the Pacific. Right. What do you do when you're a Bible-believing Christian and the corporate-created sinkhole swallows your Bible-believing Christian home? And I'm not making sport of any of that, because it would be awful. You know, the earth opens up and swallows you whole like something straight out of, you know, the Bible. Do you stand at the edge of the sinkhole and say, thank you, Jesus?
Yeah, because, what's the saying? Like I told you, I've never read the Bible, but I've heard enough of it. What is the saying? When God closes the door, he opens the door.
Yeah, in all things, give thanks to God. Even when your house gets swallowed by a sinkhole.
Yeah, because I mean, that means you're one step closer to the mansion that is somewhere lurking in your future. It's just like people who don't make buku money, who vote Republican, thinking because, well, one day they're going to be in a Republican rich crowd, and most of them, 99% of them aren't. You know, they're not going to get anywhere near it. I mean,
it's like when the Jehovah's Witnesses, Ferg was telling this story the other day when Boss Man Wayne and Dr. Bill and I were sitting around. The Jehovah's Witnesses showed up here one day, and Ferg, you know, he's read their little Watchtower pamphlets and stuff, and he's standing on the porch talking to him. He says, listen, your theology says that there's only 144,000 of y'all that are getting through the pearlies. If that's the case, you don't want me jining up, because you're cutting into your own odds. You might ought to be leaving.
In fact, you better start doing the complete opposite.
Throwing some folks out.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember that one.
Well, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
It does to me. I mean, it's 144,000. I think the quota's already been met.
A long time. No, because they got millions.
Yeah, well, even if it's just a million, that only leaves a 14.4% chance of you getting in. That's not good odds. I lived in Vegas before, you know.
Yeah, and what's this story out? You mentioned Vegas. What's this creepy story out of Vegas that I saw today? A couple of people were arrested trying to kidnap cops in Vegas. Yeah, well, not just kidnap and execute Las Vegas police.
Yeah, I saw something about that, I think early this morning or late this afternoon. I didn't hear about it. I'm not sure. I didn't follow it. You know, I mean, that's totally weird. And of course,
as usual.
Were they the white cops?
Well, we don't really know that part of it, Duncan. But of course, it's not, because if it was, you know, it'd be all over Fox. Curiously, it is not the new Black Panthers behind this.
Well, there's only three or four. Well, actually, I think they doubled their number to six or eight. But I don't think they have enough people to do that yet. But I hear them and Jesse Jackson Sr., although he's never been affiliated with him, he's thinking about getting involved in that.
Well, this particular story is of two guys, David Allen Brutsch and Devin Campbell Newman. They are sovereign citizens. Y'all familiar with that?
No.
Sounds familiar.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading about those on Rational Wiki.
Yeah, the white supremacist, anti-government, and what they were going to do, and by the way, David Allen Brutsch, is a registered sex offender from California. But he said, blood or no blood, it doesn't matter. I will kill anyone that tries to stop the cause of liberty. I have no qualms about it.
They sound nutty as the Minuteman.
Well, they're philosophically, they're not far from them. They are sovereign citizens. That's a movement that says everybody is a nation. You have sovereign rights over yourself. You know, unless it's a woman wanting to deal with her body, right?
Yeah, that's the other weird thing about those white supremacists, because, I mean, they extend their hatred toward, I mean, as long as you're a Protestant, it's all right, but if you're a Catholic, they don't, you know, that's almost as bad as being dark-skinned. And not only that, I know some Catholics who have that little racial tinge, and next time if I ever see one, or talk to one, I will bring that up and see what their response is. You know, you're a Catholic, and they definitely think you're going to hell because you're not the right club.
Well, this is a bizarre story. Let's see. Here was the plan: the officer would be the police officer would be captured and bound, then transported to a sovereign jail, and they would be tried, found guilty, and then executed. And then they were going to use bleach and vinegar to remove all physical evidence from the bodies before they dumped them in the desert.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's just so weird. Why would you even think of doing something like that? I don't know. I guess I'm just too logical. I mean,
well, you have to kind of look up and do the background work on the sovereign citizen movement. Remember when the father and son were caught in West Memphis, Arkansas? And they were on their way to kill Barack Obama. They want to print their own money. They want to. They're basically libertarians gone even worse. I'm not going to say gone bad, but gone even worse. Of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center keeps a database on all of these freaks, and they're classified by the FBI as an anti-government extremist and domestic terror threat. The Southern Poverty Law Center, who is much better at this stuff than the FBI can ever hope to be, says, sovereigns believe that if they can find just the right combination of words, punctuation, paper, ink, color, and timing, they can have anything they want. Freedom from taxes, unlimited wealth, and life without licenses, fees, or laws are all just a few strangely worded documents away. Nice, huh?
Yeah, no food examinations, No, you know, I mean, unless you're a vegan or something like that. I mean, I was a vegetarian decades ago. I'd like to get back to it, but, you know, still like to eat a little red meat. You know, I kind of like to have a little bit of inspected, but even that's acceptable.
Well, yeah, you'd like to not go down the road that they're going down in China, where you get sold rat as pork, that kind of thing.
Well, unless it's premium rat. I hear that premium rat is damn tasty.
Oh, you're talking about the free range organic abiotic probiotic rat? Yeah.
Exactly.
By the way, we just got a note in from Granny T in Tennessee. She says, so, Ferg's training for the ministry now, huh? Doing snake handling 101? She said, my brain demons have just been running amok since Wednesday prayer meeting. Believe me, I understand. So do we all. Good God. Oh, and thanks to Sal for jumping in. That's really appreciated. So we passed the $100 mark. Thank you very much. And that leaves us, goodness me, about $240 away from fundraising goal, something like that. Yeah. So many, many thanks to Sal. Let's bring on another phone line and see if we can just make the magic continue. Hey, welcome to the program.
Added a group.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Jim. So we got Jim and Jim on the old school telephone lines. And who did we just add to the Skype group, Duncan?
Steve from Canada.
Hey, Steve.
And I'm going to see if Jug wants to come in.
Well, that should be an interesting confab.
Oh, I think, I think we've got, we may have Jug a Punch coming in. So, yeah, it looks like a good.
Hello?
I just love all this.
Did you say your son brought in a water moccasin?
A baby. The rains have been so heavy here that they've washed over the road, and they kind of came at him as he was coming back from a friend's house, and Well, they were small enough for him to give a good stomping to.
Even the baby, well, I'm glad it's dead, because even the babies can cause you grievous harm.
Oh, true. Well, more harm even, because they can't, it's said, we've always heard it said folk wisdom around here, that they can't control, they can't control the amount of venom they put into their bite.
Well, I think that's probably true, but I'm not sure about that. But nonetheless, I thought that was an interesting, and I'm not trying to be contentious here, but, you know, Catholics and other people like me, we do not like being painted with the same brush, okay?
What do you mean?
Just please don't paint people who are Christian and people who are Catholic or Anglican or whatever with the same brush, because we're not like that.
Well, see, Jim, that's the problem. I have no way of differentiating, because the Catholics, the Anglicans, the Lutherans, the Presbyterians, or, you know, any of the so-called mainstream faiths, they don't tell us who they don't denounce the Fred Phelpses and these weirdos out there. So it's kind of hard to work around.
I'm sorry, you're wrong there. We certainly do. If you don't believe it, ask your parish priest or ask anyone there who has any sense he's not a member of one of those crazy sects that you played for me the other night about Fred Phelps and that crazy daughter of his. No, we are not like that. And that's the reason I came on the line tonight, is to assure you that that is not the case. Fred Phelps does not represent anything as far as mainstream faith are concerned, with which I am familiar.
Yeah, I understand your position, Jim.
Fred Phelps is a no-good son of a bitch. His daughter is, as far as I'm concerned, should have snakes for hair, because she's nothing but a Medusa. And, you know, she's a horrible, hate-ridden woman. And these people who go out to these funerals and do what they do, and the practice of their perverted psychobabble, it isn't representative of mainstream faith, at least not.
Well, I mean, isn't the faith itself defined by things like the Apostolic Creed? You know,
exactly,
where you
actually the Apostles' Creed. I read it to you years
right,
ago.
Right, right, right. You know, you where you believe
you
that
you didn't even know what it was when I read it to you.
Actually, I did.
I don't know what it is.
Who was that?
Jim.
Oh, hey, Jim. But the point here is that if you believe, you know, the born of a virgin, all that stuff, welcome to the club. So, you know, Fred Phelps believes Jesus was born of a virgin, crucified, rose on the third day. He's Christian.
But that's not the only thing Fred Phelps believes. Fred Phelps is a monger of hate. Fred Phelps is just some type of parasite who feeds upon the hatred and the baser instincts of anyone who's stupid enough to follow him. And please don't compare him or put him in any way connection with me personally. And with me, this is personal, okay? Please don't do that.
Well, anybody want to take up the...
For you personally, I won't, but, you know, as far as Christianity, in particular, and most religion, all religion to me, it's all nonsense. But that's your prerogative. I respect your right to believe what you want to believe, as long as, you know, you don't want to...
Have you heard me condemn you or try to convert you? No.
No, no.
And I have not, nor will I ever. But, you know, I would appreciate, gentlemen, a little courtesy there.
Well, we need some sort of a line of demarcation, Jim.
Well, I don't think there are lines of demarcation when it comes to certain people, because they're so militant in their beliefs. I mean, you don't see me coming over there trying to convert you, Bob.
Well, these aren't conversion issues.
Well, whatever. Someone just made that comment about as long as I don't try to convert them, and that's the reason I address that issue. But nonetheless, it's a personal thing. there are things that I don't agree with that do occur in a lot of the mega churches and the types of Benny Hinn's and Cerullo's and Bob, you and I have talked about this.
Brain demons.
Well, whatever. But these people are nothing in it but for the money, and they're taking advantage of people who simply don't know better. And we
Did you hear that story out of Germany? I heard it on Malloy's show a couple of months ago, where that Germany has a way where, because of their system, the churches gets a portion of their money from the government. I don't know how it works, but it was something to the effect that, because a lot of people, not that many people were going, that they weren't even giving it was some religious thing, because people weren't checking the right box, because they were checking the box for other social programs or something.
Anything about that. I know that Germany has had its history of conflicts with, for example, the Roman Church. Bismarck certainly did it with the Kulturkampf back in the 19th century.
Yeah, that's where Martin Luther came from.
And, of course, Martin Luther came from there. And, of course, you had other... and basically, Martin Luther was supported by a number of German nobles who had no love for the papacy. And I can understand as far as the papal conduct is at that time, may have been concerned, but they had their problems mainly with the Holy Roman Empire, which in my opinion...
Which was a political problem that was...
Which is neither holy, Roman, nor empire. And when Luther came along and, you know, he and his friend went down to Rome and they saw the abuses that were being committed in the Vatican and under people like Sixtus and, let's see, the Borgia popes and some of the others that were not exactly... very good examples of Christianity, to say the very least. They, of course, politically wanted to break away from all that, from Vienna. So there was a lot of politics there. There's been a lot of politics in you know, as far as the Roman Church is concerned. And I will acknowledge the abuses. Yes, I will. The sale of indulgences. Yes, I will. But nonetheless, you can't throw everything out with
right, but Jim, what I'm getting at, you know, for instance, the Apostolic Creed, you know, God the Father Almighty, Creator of heaven and earth, Jesus Christ, only Son, our Lord, conceived by the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, crucified, died, was buried, descended into hell, rose again, ascended into heaven, seated at the right hand of God, and will come to judge the quick and the dead, believe in the Holy Spirit, communion, forgiveness,
okay.
Resurrection.
In my catechism, I know it very well.
Okay, so good. Guess what? Fred Phelps believes every one of those things.
Well,
he's a Christian.
Well, maybe he does, but that doesn't.
That makes him a Christian, doesn't it?
Not necessarily. Not when you practice hatred and the vitriolic messages that he promulgates. No.
But there's nothing in there about that, Jim.
Fred Phelps does not believe in the Apostolic Creed, Bob.
Now, I know we never said it growing up because it includes the phrase Holy Catholic Church. So as a Baptist, we were afraid that we would be struck by lightning if we said that.
Well, I'm sorry for you then. I really am.
But it should be noted, it's little c Catholic.
But in my word, it's big C, but it means basically all-encompassing.
Let me ask you this. So is that guy we're talking about really truly accepts your version 5 minutes before he dies? He goes to heaven, he gets a get out of hell free card if he truly accepts. Hitler truly accepts 5 minutes before he committed suicide, he goes to heaven?
That's between them and God. I can't answer for those people.
Down for that whole box?
Well, I think what we just heard a moment ago qualifies as a denunciation.
Adolf Hitler. As a matter of fact, Adolf Hitler was one of the most anti-Christian people in the world, who happened to be born Catholic, who sang in the choir, and then departed from it. And one of the main things of the Nazi doctrine was to destroy all churches and replace it with their own creed, even to the holidays and stuff like that.
Right. Mussolini was a friend of Hitler's, and Mussolini was pretty good pals with Italy because Mussolini, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, gave the Vatican to the Catholics and made it its own.
In 1929, there was it was back in 1870, actually, when the Vatican became its own state. And then, of course, Hitler, of course, had the Concordat with the Church, and which, basically, it was the means that the Church sought to survive.
And the man who would later on go on to be Pope John the 23rd got himself in grievous trouble with Pius's papacy because he suggested it might be a nice thing if the Church would go ahead and excommunicate him ex post facto.
Well, John the 23rd is now being made a saint. He's now being beatified.
But the Church at the time severely punished him for suggesting that. Before he was elevated to the papacy, but the larger question is not Hitler or Fred Phelps.
I don't think Cardinal Roncalli could have been elevated to the Holy See if he had had such a difference about that. I mean, you know, there are a lot of Catholics who don't like Hitler.
Well, the history's there. He editorialized over it in one of the sacred newspapers or whatever it was. And got himself into a world of crap.
John the 23rd was a kind, beautiful, decent human being, and no one will ever convince me otherwise.
Well, no, I respect the fact that he wanted to do that. But the larger question is not individuals.
It is very individual.
The larger question, Jim, is the fact that, Mother Teresa is not really a good example.
What about Galileo? I mean, what's his status? I mean,
well, they finally got around to apologizing for torturing him.
My curious question is the 400 or 500 years it took for him to get around to that. After he died, was he in hell? Or is he in heaven now? Is everything cool?
You'll have to ask him one day.
Or never.
You'll get a chance to.
You probably will. You probably
I
will.
Thought that.
And Galileo, whatever his name, whatever you want to call him, made a mistake as far as the church doctrine was concerned, revoking the Aristotelian theory as opposed to the Copernican theory. It was basically a lot of ignorance then. And, of course, if you want to find histories of ignorance, I think the church is one of the, it's one of many places to find examples of human ignorance throughout history.
And go ahead, Duncan.
Can I change the subject?
I'd love it if you would.
Can I add one more thing? I just wanted to point out that right-wingers often accuse Muslims of the same thing.
That's precisely my point, Dean.
Yes, sir?
Precisely my point.
Does anybody have a remembrance or of when little kids started going door-to-door selling candy and whatever, pledges? It's like every year you get the kids from school. The schools don't.
Oh, no, that's one of those things. That's one of those things that drives me crazy. When I was a little kid, Duncan, maybe you experienced something similar. If we were going to door-to-door selling candy, it was because, we were raising money for the drama club or the science club, you know, things, you know, extra special things.
Well, I did it for UNICEF for many years.
Can I chime in?
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
This is Thomas Jug. I went to parochial schools. We went door-to-door every year selling everything, and it wasn't for the drama club, for anything. It was for the school, and so such that I think they adopted it from us.
Well, I think there's truth in that, Thomas. But what I was getting at, you know, we would sell candy and stuff as extras. But now, and I'm not kidding, it disgusts me. They send 5-year-olds home with order sheets in order to sell stuff that goes mostly into the pocket of the candy company or the whatever the garbage company is that they're hustling, and the school gets a pittance in order to buy chalk, if that's not too antediluvian, but you know, to buy basic necessities for running the schools. And I think that's what Duncan was getting at.
Yeah, we just had some kids come by who were selling chocolate. And I don't know why they were selling it. My wife answered the door, and she bought some. But anyway, it just struck me when you're talking about religion, you know, and people going door to door to sell the religion. I mean, it's just, when I was a kid growing up in the 60s, nobody went door to door hawking anything except for Halloween.
Yeah, well, that was, and especially with you growing up in California, Duncan, that was a significantly more enlightened time. Because it's
only... what about the Jehovah's Witnesses, Duncan? Didn't they come around?
Yeah, but I mean the kids. I mean, we didn't go out. We didn't have to go out to hustle money up to fund our softball team at my elementary school. We just, you know,
no,
everything
the
was
taxes,
paid for.
Yeah, taxes supported the softball team at the right.
Yeah, well, that's part of getting rid of public schools in general and taking it. Privatizing education and just everything's privatized. Everything's got to be for a profit now. Yeah, I mean, I've seen that coming for the last couple of years, but yeah, I'm becoming more and more aware of it because, and then they talk about the magnet schools, and actually I hear they aren't really even that much better than the others.
No, the statistics don't even bear out the magnet schools.
By the way, Bob, I wanted to mention that I called Senator Feinstein's office. I had to call her Los Angeles office today, and I called Boxer's office again on behalf of trying to get them to sign on or sponsor the AIC Act.
Awesome. Right now we need sponsorship. And, you know, we talked a little bit about that in the late night chat last night, and I think we've got a working strategy there. Just to back up, because Jehovah's Witnesses got mentioned. This is a funny one. I was sitting around, like I said the other day, talking with Boss Man Lane and Dr. Bill Ferg was there. And Boss Man Lane relayed a story of a visiting labor business agent talking about being visited by the Jehovah's Witnesses. And the guy stepped out onto the porch, and they made their little Jehovah's Witness pitch. And he said, "Listen, I'm Italian, I'm Catholic, and I'm a union member." And they kept pitching. He said, no, really. "I'm Italian, I'm Catholic, and a union member." And still they kept pitching. They wouldn't. He said, "Listen to me. I'm trying to be gentle. I'm trying to be nice here. I'm Catholic, I'm Italian, I'm a union member, and I'm from Chicago, and I don't like any witnesses."
That is a funny one, Bob.
we all broke up laughing. I don't like any witnesses.
That's pretty good.
Well, good for him. I mean, you know, he stated his piece, and they should have left him alone. God.
Well, they finally did after he got after the fourth time.
I've had to deal with them too. And, you know, I basically tell them, "Look, I'm not interested in your particular brand, and I appreciate your coming, and I will say good night, goodbye, so long, farewell, whatever I can quote from The Sound of Music."
Yeah, you know? Adieu, auf Wiedersehen.
That's what I basically do. Because one night I did entertain a crowd of those people. It was a terrible rainy night, and I really I really, I said, well, you know, if you at least have the conviction of your faith, I'll listen to what you have to say. And so when they came in, I was sitting there having the scotch and water, and I asked them if they wanted a drink. Of course, they said no. And I said, would you like some hot tea? And I gave them hot tea, and then, you know, they got into all this business about their particular thing, and I didn't particularly agree with it, and I had my cat in my lap, and I said, what do you think about this cat? And they said, well, it's nothing. I said, nothing? And I said, do you know how I feel about this cat? I said, this cat is an angel. I said, this cat was sent to me by some sort of providence to care for, because I've taken in many, many, many animals and things of that nature. And basically, I guess you might call me a St. Francis of Assisi freak, but nonetheless, after they particularly said that, that's when I showed them the stairwell and the door.
Yeah, time to go. Yeah, never invite them inside, Jim.
Well, I mean, you know, I was trying to be decent to people. It was a cold, rainy night, and it was, and I was, I mean, it was just dreadful outside. And I was sitting there, I had a warm fire going, and, you know, I said, okay, tell me what you got, because we'd had problems with these people before when I was growing up, and I never really heard what they had to say. And I have an open mind to just about anything. And that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to be decent, humane, open-minded, and treat them the way I would wish to be treated. That's all I was trying to do.
To me, the warning sign was when they turned down the drink. That is a red flag.
Yeah, but by the same token, it's also a blessing, Jim, because you don't want them drinking your good scotch.
No, exactly. I thought to myself, I didn't think they probably would, but I thought, I mean, you know, on a cold night when you have a, you know, your fire burning and it's raining, like, and it was sleeting, actually. And I thought, well, something, you know, a little wise with the stomach's day, as St. Paul said, and, you know, maybe to help you along your way. But nonetheless, it was basically an exhibition of my own basic sense of hospitality. You know, being a boy from South Carolina, that's what we do down there.
Y'all come in now, and now y'all go away. Yeah, that business of animal. I mean, if you're going to believe in souls, let's believe everybody gets one. Including the animal people.
Well, you know,
that's why I prefer, in sort of my hierarchical view of things, I much prefer animism. You know, let's just view the whole planet as the living thing that it is, and proceed from there.
Speaking from experience, from people I know, there are three surefire ways to get rid of a Jehovah's Witness without even saying a word. Number one is to answer the door stark naked. Number two is to answer the door holding hands with another member of the same sex. And number three is to just slam the door.
Well, no, there's also, but Sergi, there's, and we got to get out of here, but there's a number four, too. Cross yourself and cross them.
I've heard that works with Mormons as well.
Yeah, they run. They run.
Why?
Because that's demonic idolatry.
Oh, there.
Yeah.
What does cross mean?
You know, where you know, my daddy plays dominoes better than your daddy plays dominoes, where you go, what is it, down,
okay.
Left, right?
Your point's well made. I mean, you know, what do you want me to do, genuflect? Like? No.
Hold on. Cross them? What does that mean? I'm sorry.
Well, that's when you reach out and you do it in the other direction to them so that you, you know, you put the hex on them, too.
All right. I thought crossing was where you put your fingers on both, and you like you go up from your head and then you go down and
yeah, that's it. That's it. That's it. I mean, you know, watch a kicker getting ready to kick a field goal. You know, he'll do that. You know, so that God will make the ball go through the uprights.
Okay.
Let's let Bob get out of here. We can keep this group going if we want.
Yeah, yeah, let's do. Yeah, got to get out of here. You guys have a great weekend. Thanks to everybody. And hey, thanks to Liv in South Carolina who just kicked in another $50. That takes us to 160 for the evening. Thank you very much. That takes us down to 190 for the deficit, which means we got work to do on Monday. But, you know, thank you for keeping it all going. Thanks, everybody. Rick Smith is on his way. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk Monday.
Bye
now.
Night, y'all.